against NOAAttacks or visit NOAAttacks.org. Because no child should feel like a fish out of water. Brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Hey, Uncle Sam here. You know me, the guy with the red, white, and blue suit. The top hat, beard, prone to pointing. Anyways, I was thinking about you the other day, and you know, you really work hard, and dadgummit, you deserve a little something special. So I talked to my friends at the IRS. Now, if you get to talking to them for a while, you'll see they really want to help. And they all came up with this telephone excise tax refund. If you paid for long-distance service for the past 3 years, you can request a refund. A standard refund is about $30 to $60. But it may be better for you to request your refund based on your actual phone bills. Visit IRS.gov for details. Remember, Uncle Sam says, I owe you. It's easy to request your refund, and after all, you deserve it.
Meet the faces of influenza. Groups who should be immunized against influenza every year.
He's in the group 6 months to 5 years old.
I'm 4.5 years old.
Pregnant during influenza season.
We live with a baby under 6 months old.
I live with someone at risk.
Live with someone at risk.
I care for someone at risk.
I have a chronic medical condition.
Diabetes.
Asthma.
I have COPD, a serious lung disease.
I'm 50.
I'm over 50 years old.
Way over 50.
Do you see your family or yourself here? As one of the many faces of influenza, you and I and those close to us need to get vaccinated. Each year, about 36,000 Americans die from influenza and its complications. So see your health care provider about influenza immunization. Get immunized. Vaccination is a safe and effective way to prevent influenza. Visit facesofinfluenza.org. Influenza isn't the common cold. It's serious.
Time now for another edition of the Wake Up Call with Liz Brown. Views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or advertisers of WGNU Radio. This broadcast is a production of Norman Broadcasting Company, Incorporated, and WGNU Radio, and is intended solely for the information and entertainment of our listening audience. Any rebroadcast, transcribing, recording, or other use of this material without the expressed written consent of Norman Broadcasting Company, Incorporated, and WGNU Radio is strictly prohibited. We ask that you govern your calls within the bounds of brevity and good taste. And now, the Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Liz Brown will be in the studio beginning at 6:30 this morning. Until then, we'll bring you a clip of the best of the Wake Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
We say to all in this nation who dare listen to us,
black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the wake-up call. This is Liz Brown. Our number here is 1-877-920-WGNU. Don't forget, we broadcast live on the World Wide Web at www.wgnu.net. And a really cool thing, we are archived daily at whiterosesociety.org. That's whiterosesociety.org. So if you missed an hour, go get an hour. Real easy at whiterosesociety.org, archived daily. I one of the things that I talk about on the show all the time is that it is so hard to find good news. It's hard to find good news. Apparently, there has, as of today, over 10,000 workers in America have been fired or discriminated against for demonstrating support for a union. Why is that? Does that speak to the time that we find ourselves in? Does that speak to the quality of laws that we have protecting union workers, union supporters? Does that speak to the attitude that we don't need unions anymore, and then that's a permissible group to discriminate against? What's going on? I have joining me this morning David Bonnier, former congressman and currently chairman of American Rights at Work. He's joining us from Mount Clemens, Michigan. Congressman, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm outstanding. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
What's happening? Why are 10,000 workers in America being fired or discriminated against for demonstrating support for a union? Where are we in this nation with our attitude about unions?
Well, that 10,000 number, just to start with, Liz, is a number just this year. It's on average in the last few years, it's been 23,000 workers fired illegally or discriminated against on their jobs illegally. And that's been determined by the National Labor Relations Board. That doesn't count the thousands of other workers out there who give up on their jobs, who are fired from their jobs, who don't contest it to the National Labor Relations Board. So it's a growing problem. Every 23 minutes in this country, somebody is discriminated against or illegally fired from their job in this country. It's happening, to answer your question specifically, because of several factors. Number one, the law is not enforced anymore, and the law is weak. It's been weakened since it's been invented in 1935, the National Labor Relations Act. Number two, there's a huge industry out there called, we call it the union busting industry. They spend millions and millions of dollars. They are involved in about 75% of all organizing campaigns across the country. And these are mostly law firms that come in and bend the law, oftentimes advise illegally their employer on how to keep a union out. And it's a huge industry in America today. Thirdly, the progressive community outside of the worker movement has lost sight of what historically the labor movement has done for workers. And it's, you know, A. Philip Randolph once said that justice isn't a given, it's exacted, you've got to take it. It's something that you've got to keep fighting for. And unfortunately, the so-called progressive movement in this country hasn't made it a priority, and the fight back has not been what it should be. Protect workers' rights in this country.
And when we talk about the progressive component to that, is that why we're seeing what we're seeing in Washington D.C.? Is that also a reflection of that lack of fight back?
I would say yes. Even in the Democratic community in Washington, there is not the understanding, the history, or the fight for workers' rights. In order for workers, we know 42 million workers would love to have a union if they could, belong to a union if they could in this country. 42 million additional people. They can't. They're blocked for the variety of reasons that I've mentioned to you. And in order for that, for us to challenge that, you've got, the labor movement can't do it by itself, obviously. The union density has shrunk from 33-34% when I was a young boy growing up in Detroit, now down to 13%. So how do you change that? You've got to do it with a coalition of people. You've got to do it, actually, the way they did it in Missouri back in 1978 when they beat back the Right to Work initiative back then. They put together a coalition of people. It's got to be not only worker movement, it's got to be the civil rights movement. Included in that's going to be the environmental movement, the religious movement. All the progressive pieces have to come together and understand it. And I formed an organization with some others 2.5 years ago called American Rights at Work. And our purpose is to educate not just workers but these concentric circles of progressives around the country about what's going on here. Because if I could just go on for 1 second, and I know I'm talking a little too long here. Because what's going on, this has been a concerted effort by the far right in America, not only to break unions and enhance corporate America around the country, but by doing so, they are breaking the political back of the progressive movement. So it's a twofer for them. The National Right to Work, we call it For Less Committee, and their allies have been at this now since 1940, and they've gotten very good at it. They have huge...
No, that's a long time.
They've been at it a long time. Mm-hmm. They have deep pockets. The National Right to Work For Less Committee has a $15 million budget. Plus, they have their tentacles into a lot of talk radio, a lot of think tanks.
But, and they're also racking up a lot of wins, too, because that inspires groups to continue on. If you win.
If you win. People like a winner.
Mm-hmm.
And I can... You know, I can feel that deeply this morning as my Detroit Pistons lost last night.
Feel your pain.
But I'm staying with them. They were really were fabulous. But anyway, I want to get off the subject. But we think we can turn this around. We know we can turn it around because we think once the American people understand what kind of discrimination is going on and how difficult it is to organize and how the pendulum has swung completely the other way, I think they'll bring some justice back into the system.
But Congressman, when you say that you are certain that there are millions of Americans that would like to be a part of a union but can't, how do you measure that?
Well, we know that from a poll that was done by Peter Hart, public poll that was done nationally, and it's only about 3 or 4 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So we know people want to join a union, and why wouldn't they? You get better pay. You get a voice at work.
I hear
you get better benefits.
I hear that, but let me give you an example of something that happened here in St. Louis.
Sure.
We had the privatization of our school board, and we were out there fighting against that you shouldn't be spending millions of dollars on a district that you say is broke to bring in these corporate execs that don't know anything about running a school board. There was one group of individuals that belonged to a union that fought back. They kind of shut the schools down, the school engineers. They shut the schools down and they got their deal cut the way that they wanted to get the cut. The other unions were all missing in action on this. We didn't have our custodian unions in on it. We didn't have the teachers union fighting the way that the teachers union was supposed to be fighting. And at a school board meeting last week, the deal that the engineers cut with the school board, the new budget is out, and the engineers were told that their jobs would probably be privatized, and they said, well, we have a deal. And the attorney for the school board said, oh no, the engineer said, we had a contract. And the attorney for the school board looked them in the face and said, that wasn't a contract, that was just a deal that we had, and we don't have to adhere to that. And I was expecting, one would think in a union town like, or in a union state like Missouri, everybody would be up, all unions would be up in arms by that statement, because that means that they weren't dealing in good faith. They have no intention of dealing in good faith. And if you can take out this union, you can privatize and take out other unions. I haven't heard the uproar.
Well, you know, I don't know about that particular situation, but
you understand,
it sounds like it should be an uproar, and it sounds like there's needed leadership to come together and coalesce together. Well, you know, different folks from different unions need to band together. I mean,
and I guess that's my point, my question and my concern, that how do, if unions don't band together around something like that, how, and union members who know the benefits of being in a union, how do we expect that other people are going to join in on this battle as well?
Well, I hope other people will join in for a variety of reasons. Number one, that it's a right to associate. You have a right in this country to associate. It's part of the principles of rights, the right to religion. We have a right to free speech, presumably. We have a right to a fair trial. We have a right to associate. But what's happening in America is the right to associate at probably the most important place during the day for most people at their workplace.
Where people spend their most time.
Most time,
mm-hmm.
is being denied, and denied at an egregious level. In fact, we are so bad at allowing people to come together and form unions in this country that the International Labor Organization, which is an arm of the UN, said that we are, out of the 177 countries in the United Nations, we're ranked in enforcing our labor law in the bottom 20%. That's how bad it's gotten in the United States today. Every 23 minutes, somebody is discriminated against illegally or fired in this country. And so what we're proposing is that we do something about it. If you don't have a right to associate, Liz, you won't be able to come together with people and gain the right to free speech or a fair trial or the freedom of religion. And if you already have those freedoms, which we do here for the most part, you are not going to be able to retain them. The first thing that a dictator will do, like Pinochet in Chile or Hitler in Germany, is get rid of their right to association. And that is what is happening at the workplace, and it's affecting the progressive movement, as I said, enormously, because I'm a progressive, I'm a Democrat. The Democrats haven't won a right to work, I call it a right to work for less state. These are states that have these laws that basically inhibit the right to join unions. We have not won a right-to-work state presidentially in this election, nor did we win one in the last election, with one exception, Iowa. We barely won that. So in the last two presidential elections, there's about 23 right-to-work-for-less states. Basically, the Democrats have gotten wiped out because they don't have in place a worker movement that can counter politically, educationally, and all the other pieces that go into making a winning campaign.
Does that mean that the Democratic Party, or does that suggest that the Democratic Party is has been co-opted or consists of people that are closer on the line of Republican lights as opposed to the Democratic strongs?
It means exactly that in many ways, unfortunately. Now, I'm talking about all Democrats, but too often, the members of the Democratic Party running for office today have got bought into the corporate alone, the corporate piece.
Well, I mean, you can see that in the vote on the bankruptcy bill.
Well, that's a good example.
How could any Democrat have supported the bankruptcy bill?
That's exactly right. And we know that the vast majority of people who file bankruptcy, individuals, do so because of health reasons that really cause chaos in their family and no fault of their own. So that's a good example. There are others, and if you look at campaign contributions, you know, they say follow the money, it'll tell you the story.
And back to assessing the embracing of union and therefore the embracing of this concern that people that want to talk about or join a union shouldn't be discriminated against. There are a lot of people out there that would make the argument that kind of like the same statement that we've just been making about People don't feel that their unions fight for them the way that they used to fight for them. People believe that their unions, that the unions out there are, have gotten kind of big business. Like, I know as a person of African descent that, that a lot, from the state of Michigan, that there were a lot of these blue collar Democrats that, that union members that, that supported Ronald Reagan. So there are arguments out there and examples out there of people that are kind of disenchanted with some of the actions that they've seen from their union, and the same kind of disenchantment that we have with many people in the Democratic Party, that they don't appear to be fighting for their interests.
Well, that's correct. But for every one of those, you can always find people that are out there leading the charge. It wasn't for labor, the Democratic Party basically wouldn't exist structurally, financially, and in many other ways. I mean, they're out there doing good work, trying to organize, trying to provide a better life for people, trying to get them involved in. That doesn't always happen. There are a variety of different kinds of unions and their efficiency and performance and ratios and all that, the same as there are in corporate America. But for the most part, organized labor and unions have been a very positive influence on the democratic process in our country and certainly on the economic well-being of workers. All you have to do is look at the numbers. They get better wages, much more benefits. I could give you the numbers right now. They're considerably better. One example, the telecommunications industry. When we were growing up, there was a big fight in the telecommunications industry. These are people who work for the phone companies and that, to unionize them. And they became unionized, and then those jobs paid very, very well. Within the last 10 years, more specifically, that industry, the telecom industry, has been shifting to cable more so each and every day. So the biggest cable company in the country today is Comcast. They do the same kind of work. Their workers basically do the exactly same kind of work as people do for AT&T and for all the other phone, local wireless and long-distance companies and cellular companies. Same kind of work. Yet Comcast pays about a third less, fights unionization. So that whole, they're really the Walmart of the communications industry. So what I'm saying to you is that unionization is a really an important part of a chance for a middle class life in this country, and we're losing it because of the inability to organize today and the fact that not enough people care about it.
We have to take a break. I'm talking to Congressman David Bonya, former congressman and now chairman of American Rights at Work. He's joining us from Mount Clemens, Michigan. And we're talking about 10,000 workers being fired a year for supporting unions. This is Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. I'll be back. We have many questions to ask, and we'll get
you're listening to the best of the Wake Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU. We'll have the traffic and the weather coming up. Good morning, St. Louis. 32 minutes after the hour, 6 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton. Let's take a look at your traffic and your weather. Eastbound 40 between Lindbergh and McKnight. Look for some slowdowns, and Maryville Center through Mason Road. There's slowdowns there as well. Eastbound 70 from Bryan Road through 79. Look for slow traffic. And northbound 270 at Tezon Ferry through Doherty Ferry. Look for some delays there. Westbound 5570 from 3rd Street on the Poplar Street Bridge. It is slow. Westbound Kingbridge traffic is moving well from the Illinois Bank and the landing. Westbound 64 from Bow Avenue and the 5570 split looks good. Northbound Illinois Route 3 onto the Poplar Street Bridge. That ramp is on the move. Jefferson at 44. Lights aren't working and treated as a four-way stop. That's due to a power outage. Westbound 64 from Bow Avenue, and you've got heavy volume there. Northbound 270 from Clayton Overpass through Ladue, heavy volume as well. Southbound 170 from 270 through Hanley, look for some delays there. Eastbound 44 from Soccer Park through 270, heavy volume there. Northbound 55 from 3200 South Broadway into 44. Look for some slowdowns there. And then again from Butler Hill through 270, look for some delays there as well. Eastbound 70 from 270 in St. Charles Rock Road, you've got some slowdowns. And northbound 270 from Dorset through 70, look for slowdowns in the 70 exit lanes. That is a look at your traffic. Now let's take a look at your forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Friday. For today, look forward to mostly cloudy, chance of showers this morning. Partly sunny by the afternoon, chance of showers this afternoon, high in the upper 70s this evening. Partly cloudy with a low in the upper 50s. For Thursday, partly sunny in the morning and early afternoon, becoming mostly cloudy, highs in the upper 70s. Thursday evening, mostly cloudy, once again, chance of showers with a low in the upper 50s. Then on Friday, mostly cloudy, a 50% chance of showers with a high in the mid-70s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have scattered clouds and 62 degrees. Lambert Fields reporting the same. Stay tuned for more of the wake-up call coming up next. Take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the top of the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me weekday afternoons from 2 till 4 on AM 920 WGNU. And I look forward to hearing from you. If you have problems with a personal, work, or family relationship, call me at 1-800-DR-LAURA. That's 1-800-DR-LAURA for the issues that matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU. And for the personal issues that matter most, join me, Dr. Laura, now from 2 to 4 every weekday afternoon. Then go do the right thing.
For over 400 years, the world-famous Lipizzaner stallions have captured the imagination and excitement of the equestrian world. The Lipizzaners are the noblest of all breeds and were only ridden by the nobility and aristocracy of Europe. They are considered a living form of equestrian art. Less than 3,000 exist in the world today. Now, you have the opportunity of a lifetime to see them perform live and in person in a special anniversary edition of the world-famous Lipizzaner Stallions. See the dancing white stallions perform an exquisite equestrian ballet. See their spectacular leaps in the airs above the ground. Don't miss the world-famous Lipizzaner Stallions on their world tour. A must for all to see.
St. Charles Family Arena this Sunday at 2 p.m. and 6 p.m. Tickets now at the Family Arena box office and all MetroTix locations or call 314-534-1111.
People can't stop talking about the remarkable results they get with their Bowflex Tread Climber machine.
I lost over 20 pounds working out on the Tread Climber.
I've lost almost 10 inches off my waist.
The Bowflex Tread Climber machine combines the stepping motion of a stepper with the walking motion of a treadmill. It's the low-impact way to burn up to twice the calories of a treadmill at the same speed.
It's really strengthened my core, my abs, and there's no impact on my joints.
Call 1-800-888-7635 for a free informational DVD.
I'm in better shape now than I was 20 years ago.
Get a Bowflex Tread Climber machine for no money down and payments as low as $24 a month.
I'm 40 and I am in the best shape of my adult life.
Be lean, be fit, be Bowflex. For a free DVD, call 1-800-888-7635. 1-800-888-7635. On approved Bowflex credit card purchases, monthly payment is 1.5% of the purchase plus any late fees. The number of months you pay and total amount of minimum monthly payments depends on additional purchase and account balances. Call for details.
It's the information you need to know about but can't find anywhere else on the dial. The award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Stay tuned for more of the best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
But God bless the child that's got his own. That's got his own.
Welcome back. Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. I'm talking to David Bonnier, former congressman and now chairman of American Rights at Work. He's joining us from Mount Clemens, Michigan. Congressman, welcome back. Let me get to a call here. Rick, you have a question for our guest, Congressman Bonnier.
Yes, Congressman. One of the worst days of my working life was when I got promoted. I then became an official member of management. No overtime. It took me 5 years to get paid the same amount of money I did when I was hourly. Well, my main question is this, Mr. Bonnier. It's going to be so difficult to change these labor laws. Right now, you can change the H-1B visa laws and crack down on immigration, which is devastating to the working class. I'll hang up and listen to your comments.
Thanks for your call.
Well, I would agree with the H-1B concerns that you have, because there are many, many workers in this country today who are capable and competent and qualified to have jobs that are being reserved for folks that are coming into this country. But I think, you know, we've got to also be very careful about the whole question on immigration. The immigrants who come to this country are a very important part of making the country work in many ways, as we, I think, all are aware, and we've got to be fair on both ends of this issue. So I understand your concern with that, but the H-1B, for those who aren't familiar with it, is a program that was put in place by the Congress that reserved thousands of jobs, hundreds of thousands of jobs, actually, for mostly it started off in the telecommunications area, high-tech area, and what we're finding is, of course, that there are many people here that can fill those jobs. And the reason that this program went into effect, as it turns out, is that they can get away with paying the corporate folks a lot less than paying our workers here in this country. They don't have to worry about the rights of these workers oftentimes, because they're not citizens or nationals here. And so it's a real problem on many different fronts.
Let's talk about the law component of this, the National Labor Relations Act. We need that act to be enforced. We need that act to be strengthened in order to, I mean, that's an important component of the ability to get people to fight for this.
Right.
How do we do that?
Well, there is a number of ways to do that. I mean, for instance, we were talking about earlier your concern about the unions not rising up and taking a position on the local education issue that you raised at the beginning of the show. But, you know, in St. Louis and in Missouri, there has been an effort to take on Governor Blunt, who has gutted worker compensation and who's trying to introduce right to work for less legislation. The Jobs with Justice folks in St. Louis and in Missouri, this is an organization that fights for justice on the jobs. They came together with other local community organizations, and they took on the governor and the legislature, and that's not happened yet. The right to work has been stuck in committee, so they've done a great job with that. So you have.
I understand that, but then I also have to express my frustration with the Democratic Party. We wouldn't have Matt Blunt as governor if the Democratic Party hadn't pulled out and didn't support Claire McCaskill and give her the money that she needed to beat this guy.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a political component of that as well.
Sure.
You know, the we had a chance to take the governorship, and the Democrats didn't give her the money that she needed.
That she needed to win. Well, there's a problem, yeah. But to get back to your question, what we need to do to deal with the law is 70 years old. It was established in 1935. And so American Rights at Work, we're having a major conference next year at Harvard, actually, inviting all top academics to come and suggest ways to make the law work better for people in this country. And right now, the law isn't enforced. 25% of all union organizing drives in this country, people get fired illegally. You know, and they do that. The union busters come in. They suggest that oftentimes people will get fired for trying to organize. And that sends a very chilling message, as you can imagine, throughout the workforce. And oftentimes those elections are won by the corporate people, and for understandable reasons. That kind of activity should be illegal. But it's happening with more and more frequency. And even if a union effort is successful at a workplace, let's say they vote to join a union, or oftentimes the company won't negotiate, and they will appeal the election results. And the appeal process to the National Labor Relations Board can take up to a year. If they lose there again, the companies lose there again, then they appeal it to the appellate court. It can take another year or 2 years. It's not unusual for this to drag on for 3-4 years. And by that time, people lose interest. If these set of standards on the election process were applied to the political world, it would be an absolute outrage. We at American Rights at Work, we hired a fellow by the name of Gordon Laffer from the University of Oregon to do a study and compare the NLRB, National Labor Relations Board, election process for joining a union at a workplace with the standards we have in this country, or presumably should have in this country, for free and fair elections. And he came up with a recommendation basically that said that we have a corrupt system that in trying to elect have free and fair elections at the workplace. There's no access, equal access to those people who are going to vote. The corporate people have one-on-one meetings in which their boss will come in with you individually in a room and tell you why you should not vote for a union and intimidate you in a really incredible way. There are bribes given. People are coerced. People are fired. People are told at their work site, well, you know, if you all get together and you decide you're going to have this union, we may just end up in Mexico or take these jobs to China. That happens all the time. And it's not a fair system, and it's got to be changed.
Let me get to another caller. Carphone, Scott.
Yeah, I think a big part of the problem is that the unions basically have been busted, and they're basically dead because, you know, the people have believed the Republican corporate propaganda. And but I think also, I think the Democrats, I think they apologized too quickly.
I think so, too.
Yeah, I mean, you got Karl Rove saying something stupid. And instead of apologizing, he says, we're gonna fight, man. But Durbin, you know, he says the truth, and then he has to apologize. I mean, I know part of that is because the boss is stupid. But, you know, I mean, the boss doesn't respect you when you apologize that quickly.
I agree with you. There needs to be much more fight, much more toughness. I don't know if you may not recall, but when I was the whip of the party in Washington, my chores was, after the Republicans took power, I was the chief antagonist for Newt Gingrich.
Mm-hmm. Newt Gingrich.
And my job was to put him on the midnight train to Georgia and send him back home. Well, it took me 4 years with some help from other people, of course. We eventually ended up doing it. And you got it. This is a tough business, fighting for rights. I mean, the rights of workers didn't come easy. At the turn of the previous century, you know, when we didn't have worker comp or unemployment comp or health care or child labor laws or any of the things that we enjoy today, people had to struggle to get them. They marched, they demonstrated, they were beaten, they went to jail, some died for it. And the same thing happened in the 30s when particularly industrial workers really fought to get the right to join unions. Now we're in the same position today, and people are going to have to decide whether they're going to get up and fight for this stuff or they're going to let it just dribble all away.
Thank you,
Scott.
Yeah,
or they're going to suffer.
Thank you, Scott. Right. And again, this comes back to the same point, Congressman, that our elected officials, our elected leaders have a responsibility to lead the charge on this.
They do.
And we're not seeing this.
We're
not seeing enough of this.
Yeah, let me just jump in there, because there is a very important reform. It's called the Employee Free Choice Act. It had,
And I need you to hold that thought, please, because
okay.
we need to take another break. I'm talking to David Bonnier, Congressman David Bonnier, and he's now the chairman of American Rights at Work. He's joining us from Mount Clemens, Michigan. We're talking about how American workers are being punished for supporting a union. I'm Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. Stay with us.
Stick around for more of the best of the Wake Up Call. Liz Brown will be live in the studio beginning at 7 o'clock with Peter Downs of St. Louis School Watch. You'll want to stay tuned for that, as well as the top of the hour news, weather, and traffic. But more of the best of the wake-up call following these messages.
Davis, home mortgage consultant with Wells Fargo.
And I'm Jacques Land with the 100 Black Men of Metropolitan St. Louis.
And we're the hosts of Let's Get Wealthy, investing in more ways than one.
We'll discuss home ownership as a means to build wealth, create positive personal finances, stabilize our neighborhoods, and acquire the American dream.
Tune into our show, Let's Get Wealthy, every Wednesday at 11 a.m. to get some food for thought during your lunch hour. Sponsored by the 100 Black Men of Metropolitan St. Louis, Wells Fargo Housing Foundation, and produced by the Platinum Group.
Later today on WGNU, Sloan Ranger Show, get both sides of the Middle East controversy in the same hour. Lloyd welcomes Richard Hellman of Christians Israel Public Action Campaign at 6:10, and Dr. Gulten Ilhan of the St. Louis chapter of the Council on American-Islamic Relations just after 6:30. Both this evening, both on the Sloan Ranger Show, 5 till 7 tonight on AM 920, WGNU.
Connect Care, still connected to the community. Sometimes it seems like things are changing so fast that it's hard to keep up and hard to keep track. At Connect Care, we want you to know that, yes, there have been some changes, and yes, we are still connected to the community. At Connect Care, we still have a retail pharmacy open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. At Connect Care, we still provide transportation to patients that qualify. At Connect Care, we still provide access to in-house laboratory services. At Connect Care, we still provide some of the region's best board-certified doctors. At Connect Care, we still provide urgent care. And at Connect Care, we still see patients on a sliding fee scale. Yes, changes have been made at Connect Care, but we're still connected to you. Connect Care, still connected to the community.
Are you one of those people who look at somebody who's big boned and think that's just a euphemism for Twinkie enriched? Are you sick of the idea that we can go to war in Serbia and bomb the crud out of them, but we should stay out of Iraq? If the whole entire pop culture thing, Britney Spears, Super Bowl commercials, and all that stuff gets on your nerves, well, guess what? It gets on mine, too. So if you want someone to listen and understand, listen to me, Brett Rosen, every Tuesday, 10 a.m. on WGNU, 920 a.m.
A voice for those that should be heard. This is the award-winning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Now we take you back to the best of the Wake-Up Call. Liz Brown will be live in the studio beginning at 7 o'clock with Peter Downs for St. Louis Schools Watch, so stick around for that. But now more of the best of the Wake-Up Call. This is AM 920 WGNU.
I never explained, so I am hoping that time will. Things may not go as you plan. Dark clouds might bring you pain. But I will be in your heart still, telling you don't look down. Don't feast your eyes on things that are on the ground. And if it gets hard to focus when you're driving almost at the speed of sound, feeling nowhere bound, remember what I told you and don't you dare look down.
Welcome back. Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. I'm talking to David Bonya, former congressman and chairman of American Rights at Work, joining us from Mount Clemens, Michigan. We're talking about the rights of workers, workers being fired or punished for union support. Congressman, welcome back.
Nice to be back.
And you were saying?
I was saying, actually, I was just listening to that nice introductory music piece, and the words don't look down, and we're not looking down, we're looking up. And one of the ways we're looking up is we have the legislation that was introduced by Senator Kennedy and then by George Miller in the House that garnered 230 sponsors last Congress and will probably do the same this year, that will change the labor law in this country, that will allow people to form a union through what we call voluntary recognition or card check, where you go to a work site and you get 50% of the people to sign a card and you're on your way and you got a union. You don't have to go through this process of delays, challenge that would take 1, 2, 3 years to get a union. The second thing that it would impose some real penalties on people who illegally fire folks from their jobs. Right now, there really aren't any penalties. The National Labor Relations Board says just post it on your board that you won't do it again. It's ridiculous. and so this will have tripled the penalties. And then the third thing that it would do is it would require that you get a contract in a reasonable amount of time, so that once a union is in place, the employer just can't stall at the bargaining table indefinitely, like Comcast does quite often around the country, and then many others. And it would require that you get a first contract within 60 or 90 days.
So in list of what needs to be done first, what do we need to do first? We need to change Congress first? Do we need to get people out in the streets first? Do we need to change the laws first? What do we
need to do all of these pieces, but we have got to educate people about how serious this problem is. We're losing the middle class in huge chunks in this country. I think people understand that now. But they're looking for a way to do something about it. And if they want to be active, go to American Rights at Work. It's American Rights, plural, at atwork.org. That's our website. And you can find ways to get active to take on this battle. And that means coming together with a coalition of people and challenging, whether it's in Missouri and Governor Blunt, or it's in Governor Daniels in Indiana, who's also gotten rid of collective bargaining rights for workers there, or whether it's expanding the opportunities for a livable wage like we're engaged in here in Michigan and where we'll be in Ohio and Nevada. There are a lot of good things that are going on, too. You know, even in this terrible climate.
And terrible is not big enough of a word.
Well, it's
it's pretty bad.
It's pretty bad.
Bad
climate. We organized under this terrible system, a bad system, over 500,000 workers last year. The problem is we're losing huge numbers of manufacturing jobs, as you know, that have left the country in textiles and autos and steel and other things. So while we're still gaining, we're winning at the election process at the work site, we're just losing too much at the other end. So we've got a globalization piece here. What can people do? They can go to our website, get involved with us, come together with your coalitions in your local community and in your state to fight the Governor Blunts and Daniels and others and the Right to Work for Less Committee, who are trying to take away the rights for workers in this country.
And don't the unions face the same challenge that America faces in terms of embracing certain parts of their communities? The unions also have to learn how to ally with people of African descent and Latinos as well to address the globalization that is going on, to address the union issues.
You're absolutely right. That's a huge part of it, and it's been a struggle not only for America but for the union movement as well, as you know, to recognize the diversity in this country, to embrace it, to partner with it, to be part of it, and that's got to be a big part of this effort. There's no question about that.
And let me ask you this, as a former congressman, and I'm certain a historian of how and what happens in our Congress. Have you ever seen anything like this before that's going on in our Congress? Have you ever seen it as
well,
bad as it is?
Well, it was pretty tough when I was there right after the Republicans took over the House in 94.
Yeah, but
now it's been really institutionalized, and it's raw power, and it's as worse as it's ever been, yeah. But let me say this, as someone who dabbles in history and has a graduate degree in history, this is not uncommon in our national history. There has been times when there has been this kind of acrimony and this kind of intransigence before in the Congress. It doesn't happen often, but we're in a period where it's there now, and
do you see something different with the American people's response to it? I was talking about a story yesterday where there was a report from Waxman that there was $5 billion put on wooden pallets and dropped off at the airport and carried away in duffel bags in Iraq. And that's insane to me. And people, there doesn't seem to be the fury that one would expect from constituents that things like this are happening.
Well, they should be, because they'll take it away from you. I mean, they restrict your right to associate, then they restrict your right at the ballot box, then they take your right of sway to bargain collectively, and it's one piece after another, and they're doing it in corrupt ways as well right now, and I think illustrated one possible.
You've been listening to the best of the Wake Up Call. Stick around. Liz Brown will be on the air beginning at the top of the hour with Peter Downs and St. Louis Public Schools Watch. So stick around for that. Following the news, your weather, and your traffic. This is AM 920 WGNU.
Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis.
For the issues that matter most, it's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Aldinger. It is over. Police in Manila brought a hostage situation to a peaceful ending this morning. The gunman made a bus full of students and teachers for hours. Outside City Hall, this is what it was like just before they were released.
The kids, who can be seen waving from inside the bus, are from one of the poorest neighborhoods in Manila, and the owner of the daycare center they attend and who's holding them hostage is demanding better housing and education for them. The drama unfolded as the man and an accomplice, both armed, seized the bus. In a speech that lasted at least 15 minutes, he railed against corruption in the Philippines and apologized for his violent act. Since then, he's agreed to a deal with police to release the kids and two teachers.
ABC's Linda Alvin in London, and again, the hostage situation is now over. The American Cancer Society says mammograms alone won't cut it for some women. They are suggesting you get an MRI if you've been diagnosed with cancer or you have a mother or sister who has. Screening director Dr. Robert Smith explains why.
Mammography is simply not as effective at imaging the dense breast as it is the breast when it's mostly replaced by fat.
The American Cancer Society suggests a yearly MRI for women who are in the high-risk groups. Senate Democrats sending President Bush a pretty clear message. If you want more money for the war in Iraq, you are going to need to get the troops home by March of next year. More from ABC's Vic Ratner at the Capitol.
Senate Democrats are already looking down the road, expecting the president will veto this legislation. And once that's over, Democratic leader Harry Reid hopes that Mr. Bush will decide cooperation can replace confrontation.
We'll work on language on all these issues and try to meet him part way, but not all the way.
One big difference just in the last couple of weeks, Senate Republicans say they will not try to block this troop withdrawal plan with a filibuster. Vic Ratner, ABC News, at the Capitol.
The House has already passed a bill of its own calling for the troops to be home by September of next year. ABC News.
If you're living in a space that's too small, or too large, or too old, or just too ugly, here's what you do. Take a 2x4 to the problem, maybe some 2x6s. Heck, just take all your lumber and give it to a member of the American Institute of Architects. We'll design a home that fits your needs and your budget to a T. Call an AIA architect early, so your living space won't be too this or too that, but just right. AIA. Good design makes a difference. Visit AIA.org.
Hello, America. It's time to play Take On Orbits, the travel game where you could save $100 on your next hotel stay. Today's winner is you. That's right, you. Go to Orbits.com right now during the Hotel Mega Sale and save $100 on 5 nights at select hotels nearly anywhere in the world. It's the Orbits Hotel Mega Sale, where you can save big on the hotel that's right for you. Just Orbits and go.
Save $100 off 5+ nights on select hotels. Valid for travel May 1st through December 20th. Book by April 30th, 2007. See site for terms and conditions.
Mark Twain once said, if you don't like the weather, wait a minute, it'll change. That was certainly the case yesterday in Southern California.
One minute it was gorgeous, suddenly it wasn't.
Rain, hail, even snow came down hard and fast, but it was the wind gusts up to 60 miles an hour that did the damage. Power was out to 160,000 customers in Southern California at one point. Boats capsized, tossing 24 members of the UC Irvine rowing team into Newport Bay. Some swam ashore, some had to be rescued. Michael Moyer managed to make a cell phone call just before his boat capsized. A helicopter rescued him. If he hadn't made that call, they never would have even known to look for them.
That's ABC's Gil Gross in Los Angeles. Are you looking for a new cell phone? If you are, you might want to wait a few days to see what the latest gadgets are that are being shown off this week at the CTIA Wireless Trade Show. This much we can tell you from what we've seen so far, and it won't surprise you at all. The phones are getting even smaller and lighter than they are now. I'm Daria Aldinger, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU Newsroom.
Here's another WGNU News update. I'm Peyton Colston. In the news, despite the impending state takeover of the St. Louis Public School District, the school board is still having elections. The board will have no power after June 15th, but will still exist. The elections, coming on April 3rd, will fill two seats that are being vacated. Although the election will cost the district about $130,000, the district is required by state law to retain full membership. Should the transitional board decide to return the schools to local control earlier than expected, a school board needs to be in place. There's also been speculation that a group of parents who are upset with the state takeover or the board itself, once its new members are brought in, might appeal the state's removal of the accreditation. In other news, the 19-year-old who fired a gun inside St. Clair Square last weekend is facing serious charges. Monday, LaMarcus Williams of East St. Louis was charged with attempted first-degree murder, armed violence, attempted armed robbery, and aggravated discharge of a firearm. Williams fired a single shot Saturday on the lower level of the Fairview Heights Mall. No one was injured. He's being held in St. Clair County Jail on $750,000 bond. And if you've got a ticket in Jefferson County, County Commissioner Ed Kemp is finalizing a plan that might allow you the choice of paying it off with community service. Kemp's idea calls for traffic offenders who don't wish to go through the traditional court system to pick up roadside litter, freeing highway workers to work on the roads and not the roadside. Kemp still has to determine which traffic offenses would be eligible and how much time would have to be put in for various offenses. Kemp calls it a win-win proposition. Currently, Jefferson County has 85 workers responsible for 800 miles of road. I'm Peyton Colston, and that's this hour's update of WGNU News.
Good morning, St. Louis. 6 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU, I'm Howard Morton. Let's take a look at this hour's traffic and weather. Northbound 141, there's an accident. Left lane's blocked, and that's at 44. Eastbound 70 between St. Charles Rock Road and Cypress. Look for an accident. Stop and go traffic. There is a on the ramp to Cypress Road, and the ramp to Cypress is closed due to an accident. Jefferson 44, look for power outages. Have it, traffic lights not working. There's four-way stop. North or westbound 270 from 367 through New Florissant. Look for some delays. Eastbound 40 from Lindbergh through McKnight, and then again from 141 through Mason. Look for some slowdowns there. Eastbound 70 from Bryan Road through 79. Look for some slow traffic. Westbound 64 from 25th into the 5570 merge. It is slow. Westbound 64. Or westbound 5570 from 3rd Street into the Poplar Street Bridge. Look for some delays. There's an earlier stall that's been cleared, and that's causing some delays there. Northbound Illinois Route 3, that ramp onto the Poplar Street Bridge, you've got some slow traffic there. Westbound Kingbridge traffic from the Illinois Bank into the landing. Look for delays. Northbound 270 from Doherty Ferry all the way back through Tessalon Ferry. Look for some slowdowns there as well. Northbound 55 from 3200 South Broadway into 44, look for some delays, and then again from Butler Hill through 44, or through 270, look for some slowdowns there. Eastbound 70, approaching 270 all the way into St. Charles Rock Road, look for some delays. Northbound 270 from Dorset through 70, look for some slowdowns in the exit lanes there at Highway 70. That is a look at your traffic. Now let's take a look at your forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Friday. For today, look forward to mostly cloudy skies this morning with showers possible, then partly cloudy by this afternoon, high in the upper 70s this evening, partly cloudy with a low in the upper 50s. For Thursday, partly sunny in the morning and afternoon, becoming mostly cloudy with a high in the upper 70s. And on Friday, mostly cloudy, 50% chance of showers, high in the mid 70s. Currently, at the studios of AM 920 WGNU. We have mostly cloudy skies, 62 degrees. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call. It's Peter Downs and Liz Brown. St. Louis Schools Watch is up next. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you. The people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis.
Say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air from the brothers.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal treatment.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
This is St. Louis Schools Watch with Peter Downs, a weekly in-depth look at developments affecting the education of our children.
Welcome, 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 welcome to the St. Louis Public Schools Watch. My name is Liz Brown. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. I am here with Peter Downs. And Peter, good morning.
Good morning, Liz.
Yet another another amazing week has captured the imagination and captured the eye of the city of St. Louis. Peter, you and I were talking a few minutes ago about what is being misrepresented out there in the press about what's happening. Talk to us about what happened on Thursday of last week and where we are right now. Because I think the comments of the death are highly overrated here.
That's right. Last week, March 22nd, the State Board of Education decided that they're going to remove the accreditation from St. Louis Public Schools in 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to remove it on June 15th.
Mm-hmm.
What that means is that the schools remain accredited until June 15th. It means the elected school board retains all power to run the district until June 15th. It makes this election next week very important,
mm-hmm.
Because the two of the main disruptors of the school system are leaving. And so you get two new school board members.
And the third disruptor of the school of the board, there will be a vote for a new president of the board.
Right. The two main disruptors are her two main allies.
Mm-hmm.
So you elect two new board members. Once they're in office, you'll have a new election for president. And you'll have a board that can get things done. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that it will do, everybody who, I think all the main candidates running for this election have pledged that they would support appealing the state's decision to remove accreditation and fighting it in the courts if necessary.
And that's just a remarkable place to be, that you have a board that would sit, board members that would sit silently when their board is being stripped of accreditation and their positions are being eliminated, and you'd have board members that are that would sit silently and allow that to happen.
But it is amazing, but you know, we've been through 4 years of what I think can only be described as a concerted effort to destroy public education in St. Louis.
And we're gonna,
and these two guys were leading perpetrators of that.
And we're going to do a really intense hour this morning. We're going to talk to a couple of the candidates that are running for those positions. And then we're also, speaking of the intense turmoil that we've been in for the last 4 years, we're going to take a trip to New York and talk to their public advocate, because they're dealing with Alvarez and Marcel in the New York City schools. And guess what? They're trying to do the same thing to them as they did to us. So we're going to have a full morning this morning. This is Liz Brown, the St. Louis Public Schools Watch. I'm here with Peter Downs. Fasten your seatbelts. We'll be back.
Care, still connected to the community. Sometimes it seems like things are changing so fast that it's hard to keep up and hard to keep track. At ConnectCare, we want you to know that yes, there have been some changes, and yes, we are still connected to the community. At ConnectCare, we still have a retail pharmacy open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. At ConnectCare, we still provide transportation to patients that qualify. At ConnectCare, we still provide access to in-house laboratory services. At ConnectCare, we still provide some of the region's best board-certified doctors. At ConnectCare, we still provide urgent care. And at ConnectCare, we still see patients on a sliding fee scale. Yes, changes have been made at ConnectCare, but we're still connected to you. ConnectCare, still connected to the community.
Get a free Razor cell phone delivered free to your door. Don't want a free Razor? Then go to letstalk17.com and choose from hundreds of other free phones. Join 500,000 users who found the smartest way to buy their cell phones. Never pay retail again. At letstalk17.com, you can compare prices on phones and service plans from all the major carriers. Find the coolest new phone at the coolest price. Find the best current special offers. Read what folks have to say about their phones and plans. They actually rate and review their phones and service plans so you know which ones to pick. Do it all in the comfort of your own home. If your plan is ending, now's your chance. Try your new phone risk-free for 7 days with free 48-hour shipping. Letstalk17.com is the only way to get the absolute best deal possible. Right now, get a free Razor after $50 mail-in rebate. This is an exclusive online offer at letstalk17.com. New 2-year service plan agreement required. One-time wireless activation and early termination fees may apply. Go to letstalk17.com. That's letstalk17.com.
Tune in every Thursday at noon till 1 p.m. on WGNU 920 on the AM dial. You can talk to Dr. Walker and her guests weekly to discuss health and medical issues. Nurse Wanda always has information that you won't want to miss. Every show is different, and talking to Dr. Walker is always fun. Call 314-454-0400. You can also listen to Dr. Walker's Medical Hour on the Internet. Log on to WGNU.net. Click on Listen Live.
It's the information you need to know about but can't find anywhere else on the dial. The award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Good morning, Miss Liz.
Good morning. Who's this?
This is Dontrell Busby calling you from Laclede School, Becky Gray, room 209. Thank you, Miss Liz, for the gift from Africa that you gave to everyone. We are watching a movie. The movie is called Roots. In the movie, the setting is in a village called Jufurey. And Roots was wrote by Alex Haley. Miss Liz, we had our Awards Day program, and I received an achievement trophy Have a good summer. Dr. Buzz before 209 or Dignity Reign Supreme. Love you.
Love you. Thank you.
This is the St. Louis City Schools Watch with Peter Downs, a weekly feature of the award-winning Wake Up Call.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the St. Louis Public Schools Watch. My name is Liz Brown. My guest, as always on Wednesday, is Peter Downs, school board member. And, Peter, we're going to take a trip back in time. It wasn't a pleasant time. It wasn't a pleasant time at all. The days of Alvarez and Marcel. We have joining us from New York the New York City public advocate, Betsy Gottbaum. Good morning, Betsy.
Good morning, Shanta.
This is Liz Brown.
Oh, hi, Liz Brown.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I am very, very good. And, Betsy, let's talk about Alvarez and Marcel. When did Alvarez and Marcel get to the New York City public schools?
Well, I don't remember the exact date, but they came first, apparently, as a pro bono. they came to the Department of Education as a pro bono institution or consultant firm who said they would do some work for the chancellor. I think then they were paid with private money. And then they got a contract, a $17 million contract. I think it was about, you know, sometimes last summer maybe, or maybe before, maybe last spring. Maybe
you all hired him after what they did to us?
Yes. That was one of my big contentions because I had talked to someone out there in St. Louis when I did we did some research on it, and I called someone out there whose name I had, and this woman who was a principal of the school talked to me about it and said, you know, told me what had happened. And I'm elected separately from the mayor and therefore from the chancellor. Chancellor is appointed by the mayor. And, so I wrote, you know, I kind of immediately put up the alert sign and said, whoa, they didn't do so well out in St. Louis. And then there became all these conflicting reports that there was a political thing, that the school board didn't do what Alvarez and Marcel said, and et cetera, et cetera. But the interesting thing was the same way they did your bus system, is my understanding. They did it here, and they completely messed up your bus routes, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. And, Peter, you can talk about the mess, how they did that.
Hi.
Hi. This is Peter Downs.
Hi, Peter.
Yeah, they came in and let's say they're going to computerize it all. And, you know, there's the old phrase with computers, garbage in, garbage out. And so they don't put in, they didn't put in things like one-way streets, block streets, cul-de-sacs. And you came in with routes that were undrivable for drivers. You came in and we had on this show examples of parents, children, families living on one side of town and being assigned to a bus stop 7 miles away on the other side of town.
And we ended up having children. In fact, this was a story that ended up in the New York Times, Betsy, that we did a walk from one of our schools the route that kids would now have to walk to school as a result of the elimination of all the buses that through very challenging places and across highways. It was just insane. And again, we ended up in the New York Times with that story.
Well, that's interesting because that is exactly what happened here. Obviously, months after it happened to you, we knew what had happened to you, and we said, why in the world would you ever hire somebody who had messed up the St. Louis schools? And the chancellor on a radio show here, I mean on a television show here, said, well, he didn't know anything about what happened in St. Louis. So we tried to point out to him what had happened.
He doesn't read your papers?
I don't know whether he reads papers.
It was in your papers.
You know what? I honestly don't know, and I never understood it, because exactly what you told me just now about the routes, we have the same thing here. We have big boulevards in Queens. Francis Lewis Boulevard and Queens Boulevard. You and I wouldn't cross those boulevards in the morning. And they had little kids going across those boulevards to pick up the buses that had been rerouted. So it was things like that that were just insane.
Exactly,
they gave 5-year-olds Metro cards to go on the public transportation.
That's exactly what they did here. Turns out that it was against the law to give the kids those passes, right, Peter?
Right, right. It turned out to be against the law to require students to use public transportation to get to and from school. Here in Missouri, you're required to do the yellow school buses.
Really? Well, now, let me ask you a question, because this is really interesting. My understanding is that there, and I must have read this in the New York Times, too, they got as high salaries for their consultants, and they had very high expenses staying in fancy hotels.
That's exactly yes. The same. They stayed in the Chase Park Plaza here in the city of St. Louis, on the top floor, wonderful, wonderful digs, at our expense.
I don't understand why I still to this day, they're still here. I have called for them to be fired. They haven't been after the bus fiasco. We have heard that they're going to do, and this is my next question to you, that they're going to look at special education, and that happens to be a particular passion of mine.
Well, Peter, let Peter talk to you about what
they did to
special education.
Well, they came in, they have a mantra that school districts are spending too much money on special education.
Mm-hmm.
And they kept saying, you have too many special ed kids, too many special ed kids. And so they set up they actually had a rule. The year they were here, they passed a rule that said that principals and teachers could not refer any more children for special ed testing.
Did you hear that, Betsy?
I heard it. I mean, how can that be?
Well, that's the question.
Well, that's the question.
And that's what happens when you have businesses come into a school district when they don't have concern about the kids, they don't have the expertise, and all they're trying to do is get more money for their consultants. So why would they care? Why wouldn't that make sense to them?
Yeah, I mean, I just find it appalling. What did they do? They had this rule passed, and what was the results of the rule being passed? Because now I'm getting really nervous.
Well, we had they had that rule passed with special education, and I want to say it's hard to sort some things out, because the other thing they did the same year is they eliminated alternative education.
Yeah, what was that?
Alternative education is the children who are particularly disruptive or violent in school,
okay.
Sent
right.
to another school, taken out of the regular classroom situation. And put into a situation where there are more counselors, behavior modification counselors.
Right,
So you've eliminated that, and you've eliminated testing for special education. And what you had was there's a huge increase in classroom disruption and violence.
Really?
In the schools.
Well, think about the math of that. If you're not testing for kids for special needs, and you are putting the kids that were having the challenges being in a regular class setting in the same, that's a recipe for the exactly that.
Now, absolutely. Did you have a huge increase or a big increase in incidents of where kids who clearly had special needs weren't getting attended to cause disruptions and things like that?
Yes, there were. In fact, we had the director of special education at the time, about 6 months into Alvarez Marcel's tenure here. They fired the director of special education because she complained to the state that we were not complying with the individual education plans of special education children.
Really?
That was their solution, fire her.
Gee whiz. And so she got fired. Then what happened?
Well, then they got a new director came in who lasted about 6 months before they had yet another new director come in. We had a boatload of parent complaints. I forget the exact term for it, but it's a complaint process if your child's not getting the services he or she's
yes.
supposed to get.
Yes.
We had a boatload of those complaints filed. At the same time, we have the system is real easy to Jimmy, as it were, because there's a state inspection, but the school district gets to pick which records the state will look at.
Yeah.
And what they did is they essentially hired somebody who was who would go through the records and make sure they picked just
the
good
right.
records
mm-hmm.
for the state to look at instead of doing random. Kind of a random selection.
I see.
So, Betsy, basically we have about three things that are going on here. We're having a cutting of the funding.
Yeah.
We have the flagrant non-adherence to the law. And then we have I don't know if it's criminal, but it certainly is dishonest manipulation of the numbers to tell a truth about the district that is not true.
Yeah. And two things. One thing and what they were trying to do is they were trying to reduce the numbers in special ed.
Yes.
And as a result of all their efforts, what actually happened despite the freeze on admitting children in special ed, the proportion of students in special ed went up because parents of, like I say, regular kids weren't willing to put up with the conditions that happened in classrooms and pull their kids out of public school.
Leaving a higher number.
You know, you have a smaller base, so a higher number of special ed kids in the classroom.
Special ed kids. Wow.
And one more, and Betsy, I need to allow you to tell us where you are right now with Alvarez and Marcel, because we're going to have to take a break in just
okay.
a second.
Okay. Well, where we are is I had called after the school bus route fiasco. I called on the chancellor to fire them because of all the things that you're talking about, and so far they're still there. Now, I also heard they were going to come and do ours. Food service program. We'll talk about that when you get back from your break, because I need to ask you about that.
Oh, there's a whole lot of things. You know what? You really need to talk to us. I can give you a million hours of tapes that we have done.
Well,
on
Alvarez, I think I'd like to get those.
On Alvarez and Marcel. It has been an absolute, complete, and dismal failure. Complete, absolute.
Yeah,
individual.
And a disgrace. And the money that these consultants get, boy, I'd like to get $400 an hour.
Well, that's all they're getting?
Well, their top guy was getting $650 an hour here.
$650 an hour here.
Really?
Yep, we'll be back. Stay with us.
Okay.
Good morning, St. Louis. 30 minutes after the hour, 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU, I'm Howard Morton. Let's take a look at this hour's traffic and weather. Northbound 141 to 44, look for an accident. Left lane is blocked and traffic jams for about a mile. Eastbound 70 from St. Charles Rock Road through Cypress, look for an accident that's on the ramp to Cypress and it is closed, so expect stop-and-go traffic there. Jefferson at 44, the power outage has caused some traffic lights not to work, so treat it as a four-way stop. Westbound 270 from 367 through New Florissant, look for delays. Eastbound 40 from Lindbergh through McKnight, and then again from 141 through Mason, look for some slowdowns there. Eastbound 70 from Bryan Road through 79, look for slow traffic. Westbound 64 from 25th onto the 5570 merge, look for some delays. Northbound 270 at Tesson Ferry through 44, look for some slowdowns around the 44 exit. Westbound 5570 from 3rd Street on the Poplar Street Bridge, an earlier stall has been cleared, but expect slow traffic, especially in the left lanes. Northbound Route 3 onto the Poplar Street Bridge, that ramp is slow at the top of the ramp. Westbound Kingbridge traffic is moving well from the Illinois Bank into the landing, and northbound 55 from Butler Hill through 270, expect some delays there, as well as from 3200 South Broadway into 44, and also 270 northbound from Dorset through 70, look for delays on the 70 exit lanes, and that is a look at your traffic for this 7 o'clock hour. Now let's take a look at your forecast. For today, tomorrow, and for Friday, for today, look forward to mostly cloudy, chance of showers this morning, partly sunny by the afternoon with a high in the upper 70s this evening, partly cloudy with a low in the upper 50s. For Thursday, partly sunny in the morning and becoming mostly cloudy with a high in the upper 70s. Thursday evening, mostly cloudy, chance of showers, low in the upper 50s. And Friday, mostly cloudy, a 50% chance of showers, highs in the mid-70s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 62 degrees under mostly cloudy skies. Lambert Field is reporting the same. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call that's up next. It's St. Louis Schools Watch with Peter Downs. That's on the way. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
This is Alan Brainerd. Join me Wednesdays at noon for Design 411 on AM 920 WGNU. No matter where you live, no matter what your lifestyle, you'll find out how to turn your ordinary home into an extraordinary home. My guests and I will give you the 411 on everything from classic design to the newest decorating trends. Join me, Alan Brainerd, for Design 411 every Wednesday at noon on AM 920 WGNU, where we discuss the issues that matter most to you and your home.
Prizes awarded on WGNU will be held for pickup at the radio station for 30 days. After 30 days, all items become the sole property of WGNU Radio to be disposed of at our discretion. In the case of event tickets, tickets will be held for 30 days or until the date of the event, whichever comes first. Prizes must be picked up at our studios, which are located at 265 Union Boulevard in St. Louis, unless otherwise specified.
This is Mitch Washington of the St. Louis office of Edward Jones, located at 200 North Broadway downtown, inviting you to tune in to Radio Free St. Louis for the WGNU Stock Market Recap, weekday afternoons immediately following the 3:30 traffic update. Find out how your investments are doing and how the numbers on Wall Street are affecting you. That's the WGNU Stock Market Recap with me, Mitch Washington, weekday afternoons at 3:30 on Radio Free St. Louis. AM 920 WGNU.
Anywhere in the world at WGNU.net. The award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
This is, good morning, Miss Liz. This is Amir Mahan calling you from LaCrease.
This portion of the wake-up call is sponsored by the committee to elect Catherine Wessling, Tiffany Wohlstetter, treasurer, and the committee to elect David Lee Jackson, Jr., Valencia Hill, treasurer.
And before we get to our discussion with our school board candidates, we're going to give a couple more minutes to Betsy Gottblom. She is a New York City public advocate joining us from New York to talk about Alvarez and Marcel. Alvarez and Marcel go to New York. Betsy, you had a question about the food service because that's their next plan. Betsy. Did we lose
service it? Delivery, and I actually asked the chancellor I mentioned St. Louis, and I said, what happened there? And I said, look, we want to know what you plan to do here, because the last thing we want is what happened there. And he said, I give you my word, we're not going to do anything about food service. Now, that's why I need to find out from you exactly what was the process that occurred there in St. Louis, because perhaps we can get some indication of what might happen here.
But the first, we'll do the process, how to do the contract, and then what the aftermath was on the students.
Yeah.
2 minutes. All right. The first, they did a contract. They came back with a contract for food service that was more expensive than it cost the district to do itself.
Uh-huh.
But they said, essentially, oh, but this private company will get so many more kids to eat in the cafeterias that they'll make a profit and we'll share in the profits, and as a result of profit sharing, it'll be cheaper for the district.
How did they think they were going to get more kids to eat?
By the marketing presentation in the cafeteria, by doing foods that kids ate. They said, well, we know what kids eat. We know the different cultures in different cities. We know what kids eat. So we know we should do more fried chicken and those things is what they said. Actually their first week, I think it was,
week.
Their first week when they were doing food, they took over in the middle of a term. We had food poisoning at several schools.
Several of our babies had to go to the hospital because of food poisoning. Then we got things like boxes for breakfast. We got boxes of donuts. And let me describe this to you. Cardboard box with donuts, like a big shipping, if you're moving those big brown cardboard boxes.
Okay. Yeah.
With loose donuts. And I don't mean donuts in plastic wrap, just donuts dumped in the box.
Yeah,
that was breakfast.
That's right. There was a principal who went down to the school board headquarters with a box. He said, this is what Aramark was the company, brought for breakfast. It was just a box of loose donuts.
And I had people bringing me to the studio while I was on the air, pudding with mold on it, fruit with mold on it that was being served to the children, frozen milk, because the cheaper way of doing it is not to have anybody have to cook anything, so they would bring the stuff to the kids frozen in the morning to eat. It was horrible. Horrible. The worst possible things, from poisoning to mold to just monstrous ways of dealing with children for breakfast. Y'all just pick a donut out of that box and that's it.
Yeah, one of the things that got a lot of attention was a special education class.
That's right.
Where they brought in a tray of moldy apples.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was horrible. It was horrible, Betsy. But we got to get to our other discussion. I'd like to have you on again. And you know what? I'm going to let Howard give you my numbers because we need to talk. We need to talk.
Yes, I'd like to call you and just get some of those tapes and get some indications so we can really make sure that doesn't happen here.
Absolutely.
Further.
Absolutely. You know
Thank
what?
You.
You know what? I think that you could find a dozen people that would be willing to fly out to New York to talk about what happened here in the city of St. Louis with Alvarez and Marcel.
Really?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Let me put you on hold. I'll let Howard give you my
Thank
number,
you.
And we'll be in touch, Betsy. Thank you so
Thank
much.
Thank you so much.
All right. 1-877-920-WGNU. My name is Liz Brown. This is the St. Louis Public Schools Watch, and you know what? We have a whole lot of stuff to talk about here. We're now going to go to the candidates. And, Peter, this is an important election, isn't it?
Yes, and it's in 6 days.
It's in
April 3rd.
6 days. We have one candidate on the phone with us, and we have another candidate here in the studio with me and Peter. And, Peter, since you are a school board member, you want to introduce both of the candidates.
All right, the candidates we have on the show right now are the first two candidates on the ballot. They're Katie Wessling, who is...
Good morning, Katie.
Good morning.
And then we have in the studio, we have David Jackson, who's second on the ballot.
Good morning.
Good morning, David. I guess let's start with this, because this is a hotly viewed and understood election. Some people would say that are making the case that this is an election that is meaningless because the school board has been taken over. And I'd like to start with you, Mr. Jackson. Tell us about, you've been through this. I mean, you're running for office during this extraordinary firestorm that is taking place with the St. Louis Public Schools. Tell us where you are with regard to the state takeover.
You know, my interpretation of this law is, and I spoke both with the legal advisor of the State Board of Education and the Deputy Commissioner, Bert Schulte, I think his name is. I think the interpretation of the law is they're mixing apples and oranges and putting the cart before the horse if you look at the regulation. I don't believe that the state takeover will happen on June 15th because of that reason. There's a series of things that must be done prior to any state takeover that the State Board of Education has not done. For one, they have to come to the city of St. Louis and hold a community forum on the accreditation issue. Mm-hmm. Based on that conversation, they secondly, have to ask the current sitting board of the St. Louis Board of Education if they believe that the district can become accredited. Based on those two issues, that's when they label the district unaccredited and they move to lapse the district. There's a difference between a lapse district and an unaccredited district. And the way the law reads, the district has to lapse before
accreditation is taken away.
Yes, or before a transitional district is put in place. Not a transitional board, but a transitional district, because this is what this will be if that happens.
So, okay, legalities aside of this, what is your position on a state takeover? Are you in support of it or against it?
I am totally against a state takeover. I would support a monitored and advisor position with the state to come in to work with us on attaining full accreditation, but I am totally against the state takeover.
And Katie, you too have been part of this firestorm that's been directed at the St. Louis Public Schools, and you are an attorney. I'm not going to try to get a legal assessment from you about what's going on, but I just need to know, and I know all the listeners out there want to know what your position is on the state takeover.
Well, I join David in being completely opposed to this. I don't think it's at all helpful. They have not said anything except we are the state and trust us. We have some miracle cure. We'll appoint three magicians who are going to come in and make everything all better for you. And we won't tell you who they are and we won't tell you what they're going to do. But you just need to trust us right now. And that's just something as a parent with children in the district, as a taxpayer, as a concerned citizen, that I'm not willing to swallow. If they have a wonderful idea, then tell me what it is and I'll consider it. But until I hear something better, I think Dr. Borisaw has us on a wonderful track right now. She's doing a great job. Everyone loves her. Everyone respects her, at least everyone who's actually involved with the schools and has seen what she's done. And I think we need to keep this district stable, let her keep us on the path we're on, and if the state was going to step in, the time was about 4 years ago. The time is over. We've taken care of it ourselves, and they need to let us finish the job.
And with respect to the lawsuit that will be that needs to be filed in order to address this 30 days that the district has to appeal, would you be, if you were elected, is that something that you would do?
I would support that, yes.
And David, how about you?
Definitely support.
And one of the things that we also need to talk about here that are some of the hot-button issues out here, charter schools. We have legislation pending right now in the state, in the Senate, in the Education Committee for Jeff Smith has introduced an extraordinary amount of charter school options and opportunities and expansion. And let me start with you, Katie. What is your position on charter schools?
I think that if someone wants to open a private school, they can do that. If they don't like, the option of public schooling as it is, then they should fund their own experiment. I do not believe with taking public tax dollars away from the schools that so desperately need it to fund an experiment, which, as we're seeing as studies come out more and more, is a failing experiment. I mean, this is even a national discussion now with the No Child Left Behind Act, that they're trying to put more funding in for charter schools, and it's being rejected because they aren't showing that they can perform. So I am not supportive of adding in more charter schools. I don't know that I would necessarily try to get rid of the ones we already have because they're there and children are there, and if they can show their functioning, then I might leave that alone. But I certainly do not want to see more of them started.
And Mr. Jackson.
I am in total disagreement with charter schools. Katie mentioned that right now in Congress, they're in the Appropriations Committee. They're holding hearings on the No Child Left Behind. And currently that funding is failing because they've got money in for charter schools and none for public schools. But the U.S. Secretary of Education has stated that 33% of all charter schools nationally are underperforming public schools, but they're not increasing any funding for public schools.
And I guess that's my question to both of you, because, Peter, the assessment of the charter schools that we have in the city of St. Louis, what's their report card?
Is they're at the bottom of the heap. They don't do as well as the public schools.
And given the fact that we have some financial concerns out here and that the district has financial challenges, and I'm going to open this up to either one of you candidates, they're not working. Here in the city of St. Louis, the charter schools are not working. What are you all going to do about that?
Well, I'm in total disagreement with charter schools because I believe charter schools destroys public education. I think we ought to concentrate on the funding formula for the public schools system, and also to look at the areas where is mandated that we receive funding and try to attach those funds.
About how much money goes to charter schools, Peter?
The charter schools get the whole state appropriation for the child,
mm-hmm.
which is about $4,411 per child that's taken away from St. Louis Public Schools.
Mm-hmm.
And then whatever the proportion is of local taxes and federal money goes to them as well.
So about how much money in our district
goes? It's about $10,000 per child.
Okay, and totally how much
money?
Oh,
total in the district now is about $38 million.
So, Katie and David, well, I want to come back with this. If we're spending that much money on schools that are not performing, what would be your plan for that? How would you address that? We're going to come back. We're talking to candidates for the St. Louis Public School Board. The election is in how many days?
6 days.
6 days. Next Tuesday, right?
Yes, it is.
All right. We'll be back to continue our conversation. Stay with us.
This portion of the Wake Up Call is sponsored by the campaign to elect David Lee Jackson Jr., Valencia Hill Treasurer, and the committee to elect Catherine Wessling, Tiffany Wallstrader Treasurer.
Later today on WGNU, Sloan Ranger Show, get both sides of the Middle East controversy in the same hour. Lloyd welcomes Richard Hellman of Christians Israel Public Action Campaign at 6:10. and Dr. Gulten Ilhan of the St. Louis chapter of the Council on American Islamic Relations just after 6:30. Both this evening, both on the Sloan Ranger Show. 5 till 7 tonight on AM 920 WGNU.
Do you feel confident about your money? If you're not sure, then join me, David Gaines, each Thursday morning from 11 to noon as we discuss the issues that affect your money on It's Your Money, presented by Heartland Bank. We'll have insightful guests discussing the topics that affect your money. That's Thursday mornings from 11 to noon for It's Your Money on 920 WGNU.
Securities offered through Securities America, Incorporated, member NASD SIPC. David Gaines, representative of Heartland Bank and Securities America, are unaffiliated. Securities have no bank guarantees and are not FDIC insured and may lose value.
Around the world behind the story. It's the award-winning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown. Liz Brown.
Good morning, Miss Liz. This is Casey Marshall calling you from Laclede School, room 209. Miss Liz, I love the African necklace I wore to Red Lobster. I wish I could go.
This portion of the Wake Up Call is sponsored by the Committee to Elect Catherine Wessling, Tiffany Wolfstetter, Treasurer, and the Committee to Elect David Lee Jackson, Jr., Valencia Hill, Treasurer.
This is Casey Marshall from room 209, where dignity reigns supreme.
Hey, baby.
Have a great summer. Love you.
Love you.
This is the St. Louis City Schools Watch with Peter Downs, a weekly feature of the award-winning Wake Up Call.
Oh, welcome back, welcome back, welcome back. And I'm Liz Brown. I'm here, of course, with Peter Downs. And we're talking to two school board candidates. Katie, let's go back to you. We're talking about charter schools. We know that the ones here in the city of St. Louis are failing or barely making it. What would be your plan for that?
Well, my plan is to go to the source, which is the families that are choosing charter schools for their children, and to continue, even after this election. You know, I've been out every single night for the last 3 months going around and around to various community organizations and talking about this election, and I've realized that after the election, that's probably not going to be able to stop, because I want to continue to go around and tell people the truth about what is going on, because they don't understand that. All they think is that, you know, the St. Louis public schools in total are this big, horrible thing. You know, nobody realizes how big this district is and how many different options there are. All they get is this media constant barrage that the whole thing is bad, and so they panic and they start choosing options, not because they want to make the choice, but because they feel they don't have any other choice. And I want them to have the truth when they make this choice. And that is what I want to do. I want to keep the parent buzz going. I want the neighborhood buzz going. We've got to just let people know the truth about what happens when they put their children in these charter schools, and the lack of oversight, the differences between them and the public schools. And I think once we make sure that people know the truth about what's going on, the demand for charter schools may start to go down.
Mr. Jackson.
Yeah, I can concur with that. I think what I'm finding in the community, and especially since I've been on the road with the election, that a lot of parents are unaware of what charter schools are. They think it's an alternative to public schools, and it's not. They don't understand that that the funding is being taken away from public schools. They do not understand that the charter schools do not have to follow the same mandates as state and federal laws as public schools. They also don't understand that a charter school can hire a janitor as a teacher. And that's one of the reasons I believe the academic achievements are failing at charter schools, because they can hire anybody to be a teacher. They don't have to follow the same mandates as public schools do.
Let's talk about what's going on with this board right now. Right now we have a lot of we have a divided board, and we have members that are on a completely different agenda than what the citizens of the city of St. Louis want to happen on their board. We have three school board members that are in support of a state takeover, when obviously the sentiment of the St. Louis citizens is that they are not. What, how, Katie and David, how would you come to this board, can you make a pledge to us that that working with the other board members is something that is going to be on your agenda? Because the last thing that the city of St. Louis needs is yet another divided board. And let me start with you, Mr. Jackson.
Yes, and that's one of my platforms. I believe that there's currently three members of the board, Peter Downs, Bill Purdy, and Donna Jones, who I believe have the sincere compassion of quality education for our students. And I want to be a part of that. I think that the decisions they have made, in my opinion so far, have been excellent on educating our kids. And I just want to give them the reinforcement to move the agenda ahead.
And Ms. Wesley.
Well, I agree with that. You know, I speak as a parent, not as a candidate, when I say that when I read in the paper that Archibald and Jackson were proud that they had managed to get the state to take over, I was so angry. They weren't even trying to get along and to make things better for my kids. You know, it wasn't their own kids they were hurting. It was my kids they were hurting. And so they weren't even trying. It had nothing to do with the fact that they really believed or not what was best for the kids. They were just in the middle of a fight, and they weren't gonna care about anything except whether their side got what they wanted to do or not. And so once they're off that board, you know, the kind of things we've been seeing are not going to happen, because at least five of us on there are very dedicated to the real mission of being on the board, which is to care about the children. Now, I don't know what's going to happen with Veronica O'Brien, other than I'm sure after this election she won't be the president of the board anymore. She can continue trying. I doubt she's going to try to get along with anyone, but my goal would be just not to engage her in the way that she's been engaged and give her the platform that she's had.
And, Mr. Jackson, what is the most important issue for you?
At this point, accreditation is. I believe there's a current school improvement plan that is in place that is working. I want to continue with that plan. I believe that both the Danforth Freeman Committee report and the State Board of Education said that the plan that is in place that Dr. Bursaw initiated is progressing, and the district isn't where it was 6 months ago. So I want to continue that process, because it also includes the academic achievement of our students.
And same question to you, Katie.
Well, certainly accreditation is the goal here, but in addition to that, I think the safety of our students, both getting to and from school and while they're in school, is of paramount importance to me. They can't be concentrating on learning if they're worried about fights breaking out in the hallway or on the schoolyard or on the buses. And that is certainly, as a parent, what I hear is a major concern, maybe not so much in the elementary schools, although it's creeping down, but I hear parents say over and over again, I can't send my kids to those middle and high schools with all that going on. So we've got to get a safe environment so that our kids can do what they need to do.
And, Katie, you are an attorney, and, David, you are in real estate?
Construction.
And... We have a CEO that's coming on board that wants to come on board, who is involved in real estate, the largest builder in the state of Missouri. And Katie, you're an attorney, and I guess my question to both of you is that while this is not a paid position, it certainly seems like a full-time position. How do you see the impact of your outside professions allowing you to commit the time that is necessary to this position? And do you see any possible conflicts in the positions that you both hold on a professional level outside of being an elected school board member? And let me start with you, Katie.
Well, I don't. I only work about 60% time. I reduced my time when I had my children. And I thought very hard before this election about that time commitment, because I don't want to undertake a job that I'm not going to be able to put everything into. But this matter is just too important, not just for my own family, but for all the families in this city. And I'm just going to make the time to do what needs to be done.
And Mr. Jackson.
In business, I'm a consultant where I match small minority-owned businesses with larger general contractors. So of course, the school district now, it appears that the board members are spending more than part-time there, at least the ones that have a sincere concern about educating our kids. That's one of the reasons I also decided to jump in here, because I believe that my schedule allows me to commit any time that I need to further this district, and I'm committed to that. I believe that, that there's no conflict with my previous work with contractors because it's basically just doing business development.
And we have 2 minutes left here, and I'm going to ask each of you this question. Tell people one reason why it is so important that they go out and vote on Tuesday. And I'm going to start with you, Katie.
Okay. Well, this election has gone beyond who you're voting for. It is an issue of your right to vote itself. And even if you don't have kids in the public schools, even if you never thought about these issues other than what you read in the Post, there is going to be an issue at some point that touches you. And we are really setting a precedent between this and between the parks. If the voters don't turn out and show that they care about their right to vote on these issues, more and more issues are going to be taken away from the voters. And these schools at this point are one of the most important issues facing this city. I think the best thing this city could do to show that it cares about its children is to have a higher voter turnout than we've had in these mayoral elections, which isn't hard to do with only 15% turnout. But I'm worried that people don't even remember we have an election. So, you know, in honor of all of those troops who are over in other countries fighting for others to have the right to vote, you know, we need to respect the right that was hard won here and go out and vote and show our government that we deserve that right, that we can handle it respectfully, and that we want that voice.
And Mr. Jackson.
I concur wholeheartedly. You know, it's amazing to me that we're over in several different countries promoting democracy and giving those residents the right to vote. And here in the city of St. Louis, we're still seem like we're stuck in time where the powers to be that says your vote doesn't matter, your vote doesn't count, and moving forward without it. So it is so important that we show not only the city of St. Louis but the nation that St. Louis cares about its education system, it cares about its students, and to get out April 3rd in droves, as Katie says, more than the 12 and 13% in the last elections, and show that we care about, number one, our right to vote, and number two, those that we entrust with our kids' education in support.
Okay, and I'm going to have to let that be the last word. I want to thank you both for joining me this morning. And, Peter, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
And we have an election coming up, and then we'll be talking about it the day after election.
That's right.
Next Wednesday. Thank you for listening, and I will be back in the next hour.
This portion of the Wake Up Call has been sponsored by the Committee to Elect Catherine Westling, Tiffany Wohlstetter Treasurer, and the Committee to Elect David Lee Jackson, Jr., Valencia Hill Treasurer.
Miles inside Iraqi, not Iranian territorial waters. Speaking in Parliament, Prime Minister Blair said there was no justification for what had happened, and Iran needs to know that.
It is now time to ratchet up the diplomatic and international pressure in order to make sure that the Iranian government understands their total isolation on this issue.
Blair also said he believed the crew in their two rubber boats was right not to have put up a fight when confronted with six Iranian vessels. Linda Albin, ABC News, London.
The Senate wants President Bush to pull U.S. troops out of Iraq by March of 2008 if he wants more money for the war. Bad choice, says Arizona Republican John McCain, a presidential candidate and former prisoner of war.
I know about war. I've seen the face of war, and I know that we are making progress there, and I know the consequences of failure, which are horrendous.
The president says he'd veto any bill with an exit date. The American Cancer Society is recommending any woman with breast cancer or with a mother or sister who has had it get an MRI along with her mammogram every year.
When we know that there's a chance of breast cancer in the opposite dress, it really does make a great deal of sense if we can treat all of these breast cancers at the same
Dr.
time.
Dr. Robert Smith, healthy maybe not, but eat a Burger King with a clear conscience.
Burger King says it has a new animal-friendly attitude.
Hey, check out that chicken.
Burger King commercials still extol the virtues of animals as food, but the fast food chain says it will start buying eggs and pork from suppliers that do not keep their animals in cages. Animal rights advocates call that a positive step and hope it causes a ripple effect throughout the industry. Burger King says it will also give preference to poultry suppliers who use more humane ways to slaughter chickens.
That's ABC's Jim Hickey. This is ABC News.
Steeler takes two and a glass of Corbett.
Canyon.
Corbett, it's been years.
It's gotten great reviews.
Yeah, and Corbett has this new twist-off closure, so every glass is perfect.
Mm, incredible Cabernet.
And a Chardonnay for me.
Sure, still have Corbett's premium wine cask from our last game. After it's open, keeps wine fresh for 6 weeks.
Won't be here that long. Nothing beats this Cabernet. Or my Royal Flush.
Corbett Canyon. One great taste, two convenient choices. The new twist-off closure and the premium wine cask. Corbett Canyon Vineyard, San Luis Obispo, California.
I don't want to grow up. I'm a Toys R Us kid.
Right now at Toys R Us, when you buy toys, you'll get toys free. Buy any Little Tykes toy up to $24.99 and get one free. And Fisher-Price dollhouses and dollhouse accessories are buy one and get one free. Plus, buy two and get a third free on select Lego toys. Hurry in or visit ToysRUs.com, the world's greatest toy store. Valid at 325 through 331. Limited quantities available. No range checks. Continental U.S. only. Free item must be of equal or lesser value to the lowest price item purchase. Certain restrictions and exclusions apply. See store for details.
I want to be a Toys R Us kid.
Toys R Us.
A hostage standoff in Manila has ended peacefully. A man who owned a daycare center in a poor part of the Philippines' capital held a bus full of students and teachers at gunpoint outside City Hall. Everyone made it off the vehicle okay. Paper or plastic? Well, you might not have a choice soon in one city. Here's ABC's Daniela Bellotta.
Tired of the mess, large supermarkets and drugstores in San Francisco must use cloth or plastic bags made of cornstarch that can be composted. There are those who support the ban.
I have a hybrid. It cost me more to buy the hybrid, but in the long run, I think I'm doing the right thing.
But some shoppers aren't sold.
What cost are the bags going to be? Is it going to be able to hold the same type of, same amount of product?
Plastic bags won't completely vanish from the city by the bay. Almost 100,000 small businesses are exempt. Daniela Bellotta, ABC News.
Paulina Porizkova has waltzed off Dancing with the Stars. She and her partner, Alec, were the first couple to be voted off the ABC TV reality program. I'm Daria Albinger. ABC.
For the issues that matter most, it's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis. Now, the local report from the WGNU newsroom.
Here's another WGNU news update. I'm Peyton Colston. In the news, under state law, the loss of accreditation for the St. Louis public schools could cost the district a lot more than many realize. Missouri law allows students to leave a failing district for an adjoining succeeding district if the adjoining district agrees to take the students. The Parkway and Clayton school districts are considering just that. The St. Louis public schools would then be forced to foot the bills for tuition and transportation that could run as high as $15,000 per student in some districts, a great financial drain on a district already stressed. Meanwhile, Missouri State Senator Jeff Smith wants to make it easier to start a charter school in St. Louis. Under current law, charter schools must be authorized by the current St. Louis School Board or through the sponsorship of a public college or university. Smith has proposed a bill that would allow the mayor's office to give the okay to new charter schools in St. Louis. He says there is one type of school he hopes to help bring to St. Louis in particular.
The type of school that I'm most interested in bringing, and the real impetus for me doing this, is the KIPP model. KIPP is an acronym for the Knowledge is Power program. KIPP schools have been probably the most successful schools in the nation in urban settings. They're middle schools, and on average, they accept a population of students who are over 80% in poverty. And yet, those kids who are tracked after graduating from eighth grade, over 80% of them go on to four-year colleges and universities. So it's a very impressive track record.
Smith says he's also seeking to strengthen St. Louis public schools by lengthening both the school day and the school year, funding early childhood education, and other measures. Missouri State Senator Jeff Smith was a recent guest on WGNU's Sloan Ranger program. I'm Peyton Colston, and that's this hour's update of WGNU News.
Good morning, St. Louis. 6 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton. Let's take a look at this hour's traffic and weather. Southbound 270 between Page and Del Mar. Look for road construction reduced to two lanes, and traffic is backed up St. Charles Rock Road due to slow traffic. Northbound 55 from Butler Hill through 270. Look for slow traffic. Northbound Route 3 onto the Poplar Street Bridge is slow at the top of the ramp. Westbound Kingbridge traffic from the Illinois Bank into the landing. Look for slow traffic there as well. 141 at 44, look for an accident. It's been cleared, but traffic jams still for about a mile. Westbound 270 from 367 through New Florissant. Look for slow traffic. Eastbound 40 from Lindbergh through McKnight, and then again from 141 through Mason Road. Look for some delays. Eastbound 70 from Bryan Road through 79. Look for some slowdowns. Westbound 64 from 25th Street and the 5570 merge is slow. Northbound 270 from Tesson Ferry through Dorset Road, and then again from St. Charles Rock Road all the way back into the 70 exits. Look for some delays. And westbound 270 from Bell Fountain through West Florissant, one lane's closed due to road construction. That is a look at this hour's traffic. Now let's take a look at your forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Friday. For today, mostly cloudy, chance of showers in this afternoon, partly sunny with a high in the upper 70s. This evening, partly cloudy with a low in the upper 50s. For Thursday, partly sunny in the morning, mostly cloudy by the afternoon with a high in the upper 70s. Thursday evening, mostly cloudy, chance for showers with a low in the upper 50s. And on Friday, mostly cloudy, a chance for showers with a high in the mid-70s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 63 degrees under mostly cloudy skies. Lambert Field is reporting 63 as well. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call. What's up next? We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 8 o'clock hour. Up next is more riveting radio with Liz Brown. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
It is time for us to use our power. Please do not beg folks for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis.
I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
Struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal treatment.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the wake-up call. My name is Liz Brown. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much business to tend to. I think one of the things that I would say that occurs on the wake-up call is a constant deconstructing of the messages that you're getting from the larger media, the television shows, the news shows. We spend a lot of time on this show deconstructing that stuff. And there is, from my perspective, no better place to really get a sense of, to get an understanding of why deconstruction is necessary than the Sunday morning shows. And that's why I'm so excited this hour to talk to a senior fellow at Media Matters, Paul Waldman, because Media Matters did a report, a special report, entitled, If It's Sunday, It's Still Conservative. Paul Waldman, good morning and welcome to the Wake Up Call.
Hi, Liz. It's good to be with you.
It's good to have you here. If it's Sunday, it is still conservative. Paul, we hear it all the time that this liberal media, that's, you can't trust anything out of this liberal media. How do you respond to the phrase liberal media? Does it exist?
Not really. And the thing I think you have to understand when people talk about liberal media is that I don't doubt that a lot of conservatives who say that actually believe it. In my conversations with them, I find that they seem to be sincere in their what I think is their mistaken belief that, that there's some sort of vast media conspiracy against them. But you also have to understand that it's a strategy that they have employed very effectively for about 30 years now. They understood when they started this that if they wanted to get better treatment in the press, a way to do it was to put pressure on journalists, on editors, on TV producers, by basically accusing them of being unprofessional. And if you could attack them and accuse them of having bias, the way that they would respond in large part would be to bend over backward to be tougher on your opponents. And that's what's really happened. A lot of people call it working the ref, that if you complain about liberal bias all the time, journalists are going to respond by being really tough on Democrats to prove that they are professionals and that they don't have bias. So we at Media Matters for America don't spend a lot of time actually talking about bias. Because that's really about what's in people's heads and why they report the way they do, which is really ultimately not only unknowable, but in the end it really doesn't matter very much. What we're concerned with is what actually comes out through our televisions, through the newspapers, through magazines. What is actually there? What's being delivered to the public? And what we find is that the news media are full of what we refer to as conservative misinformation.
And we're going to have to take a quick break because when I come back, I love the way that you all have just done this in a very systematic and specific way. We're going to continue this conversation with Paul Waldman, senior fellow at Media Matters, Media Matters for America, and we're talking about If It's Sunday, It's Still Conservative, a special report on how the right continues to dominate the Sunday talk shows. My name is Liz Brown. This, of course, is The Wake Up Call. Stay with me.
This is Decent Guy Don, the original conspiracy hunter. You know, the guy that keeps you up to date on all the good guys and the bad guys out of the Council of Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergers, the Illuminati crowd, and assorted other characters who are squeezing the life out of our great American country. Tune in every evening to hear the thunderous crash as I pull the linchpin from the foundations of the House of the New World Order as it crashes down at 7 p.m. Monday through Friday with the conspiracy hunter right here at WGNU 920 a.m.
For the past several years, you've heard WGNU's community calendar of events going on in and around the area. Ever wonder where the information comes from? The majority of it comes from our listening audience. If your nonprofit organization would like help promoting its events and ongoing operations free of charge, send all necessary information to calendar@wgnu.net. Please send the correspondence 2 weeks prior to any events. WGNU reserves the right to edit or reject submissions for reasons of time and content.
Hey, St. Louis. This is Syl Wilson. Be sure and tune in every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday from 4 to 5 p.m. for The Real Deal with Syl.
Excellent.
We'll talk about what I want to talk about, then we can talk about what you want to talk about, then we can talk about what I want to talk about again. So be sure and tune in every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday from 4 to 5 p.m. for The Real Deal with Syl. See you then.
Hi.
Hi, it's Kevin.
And Sue McCarthy.
Of the Travel Planner Show.
Before you head out for a trip, you want to know how to pack. So check weather at yahoo.com. And then you'll know what to wear when you get there.
Oh, she's so good. The Travel Planner Show. Every Saturday afternoon from 2 to 4 here on AM 920 WGNU.
The award-winning wake-up call. Analyzing the story shaping your world.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown, and don't forget that the Wake Up Call is archived daily at WhiteRoseSociety.org. So if you've missed an hour, go to WhiteRoseSociety.org and go get your hour. The conversation this hour is with a senior fellow at Media Matters for America, Paul Waldman, and we're talking about their special report on If It's Sunday, It's Still Conservative. Paul, welcome back, and talk to us about some of the factors that you looked at when you made the when you started this study on evaluating whether or not or how the right continues to dominate Sunday talk shows.
We want to answer a very simple question. Who gets on these shows? Meet the Press, Face the Nation, This Week, Fox News Sunday. Who's invited to appear? It's an important question because, you know, there may be some people listening who say, well, you know, I don't really listen to Meet the Press. I don't really watch Meet the Press or Face the Nation, whatever, so who really cares? Is their audience really all that big? Well, if you add up the shows, their audience is about 12 million, which is pretty substantial, but the key is that it's such an important audience. They really set the agenda for the entire week when it comes to the rest of Washington's journalists. The people who watch that show are journalists. They're members of Congress, people who work on Capitol Hill, really the kind of important players in Washington, and what gets determined there is who the important voices are, who needs to be listened to, and who can be ignored. And so we said, okay, well, who gets on? How many Democrats? How many Republicans? How many progressives? How many conservatives? And we counted up, actually going back 10 years, but this latest report is about the last 2 years and also what's happened since the November elections when Democrats took over Congress. And what we found is that Republicans and conservatives dominate in every single category. There are more Republicans on there than Democrats. There are more conservative journalists on there than progressive journalists. There are more solo interviews given to Republicans than to Democrats, which is kind of a special privilege that you get if you're a particularly important person. And so in every different way that we could look at it, the right always had the advantage.
And before we go any further, I get the difference between a Republican and a Democrat. That's easy. But how do you define a conservative versus a progressive? What factors did you look at to make that determination?
Well, we tried to do this as objective a way as possible, and it turns out that it really wasn't all that difficult because the group of people who get invited on these shows is pretty small. And so when you look at those journalists, for instance, it's a really small group of very prominent national journalists, and pretty much everyone agrees on who they are, that David Broder of the Washington Post is a centrist, and someone like E.J. Dionne is a progressive, and Bob Novak is a conservative. The people who get on there are pretty clear. And what we found in those cases a lot of times, you know, the people who are familiar with these shows, they'll have an interview with a newsmaker, and then they'll have a round table of a group of journalists.
Exactly.
And what you often find is that there'll be, say, a reporter from the Washington Post and a reporter from the New York Times who are both trying to be objective and not offering any kind of opinions. And then you'll have thrown in with them, say, a conservative opinion writer from the National Review, which is a conservative magazine, or a conservative syndicated columnist. And there'll be no progressive around anywhere. You see that over and over and over again.
Well, this as a person that living my life as a liberal and loving it, okay, I would define myself in that way. My challenge has been people that have been put out as progressives, there's never been any question on whether or not a person is a conservative or not, but the progressives have always been, a lot, it seems as though, the progressive lights.
Well, you're right. And one of the things that happens with when you have such a dominance of the voices on the right is that those people tend to get legitimized. And so people who are representatives of magazines like the Weekly Standard and the National Review, they make appearances on these shows. And so the rest of the Washington establishment begins to consider them as important people who need, whose opinions need to be considered. But you don't find people from the liberal magazines like the American Prospect or the Washington Monthly or Mother Jones or The Nation. They don't get on hardly at all. And so those places where there's liberal opinion are considered really unimportant. And so one of the kind of bizarre things that that you find, and this is something that I find liberals everywhere are still shaking their heads about, is that the people who were wrong about everything when it came to the most important issue of our time, the war in Iraq, people like, say, Bill Kristol of the Weekly Standard, who said that, you know, that this was going to be a great little war and that there wasn't going to be any ethnic strife and we just mow right in there and democracy would spread across the region. The people who were wrong about everything continue to get invited to give their opinions on these programs as though they are important and need to be listened to. And the people who were right about everything don't get invited. And the conclusion is that, well, you know, they're sort of fringe and we don't really need to hear what they have to say, even though they were the ones who were right.
And I guess I see the same thing that happened in the presidential debates when a Ted Koppel says that two of the candidates are novelty folks like a Kucinich and a Sharpton, and that then they stop getting invited and that you can take a presidential debate and a news person can determine that you're a fringe person and then no more attention comes to you. Is that what happens also in the Sunday shows?
It is, and you have this sort of self-fulfilling prophecy. Is when they decide that you're not important, then you end up becoming unimportant. And so we see that the range of debate is not only incredibly narrow, it's also shifted to the right from where it really ought to be. And, you know, I think that the public, when it comes to what the networks are presenting to them, you know, they're not really asking for much, and nor are we. We're not saying that you know, there should be a precisely equal balance between the right and the left on every single program, or that, you know, that the range of debate has to be expanded so dramatically. All that I think people want is something that looks reasonably like balance on that kind of a forum, is that, you know, there are lots and lots of people who have interesting things to say and are or should be important players in Washington who just don't get invited. And, you know, so one of the responses that the networks give is, well, you know, the Republicans are in charge. And so, you know, that's why they end up getting on more, is because they're the ones who are making the decisions, and so they've been ruling Washington, and so that's why they get on the shows more. So one of the things that we wanted to say was, okay, well, their Democrats won both houses of Congress in November, and
so
now they are partly in charge.
So has it changed?
Well, the answer is not really. There was one show, ABC News This Week, which actually did change. They are now presenting a reasonably balanced debate between Democrats and Republicans. So they did it, but the other shows didn't. And so even since the Democrats took office or took both houses of Congress in November, the Republicans still have an advantage on the other shows.
Well, let's look at the Tim Russert show, Meet the Press. Talk to us about what you discovered when you started looking at from 2005 to 2006 of the Meet the Press.
Well, Meet the Press is really the most important of the shows. It has the highest ratings, and it's the one that has the highest prestige. And Tim Russert has this reputation as sort of the toughest interviewer in Washington, which I think is really far overblown. One of the interesting things. Yeah, one of the interesting things that came out of the Libby trial, the Scooter Libby trial, was that there were internal communications at the vice president's office talking about getting their message out to counteract Joe Wilson. And one of the options that they were debating was, well, we could just send the vice president on to Meet the Press because we know that will be kind of a clean place to get our message out, and there won't be anything problematic about that. They viewed going on Meet the Press as a way that's something that would work to their advantage. And one of the most fascinating things when Tim Russert took the stand, he testified that when he talks to government officials in Washington, as he often does, he operates on the presumption that unless they tell him they're going to be on the record, everything that they say to him is off the record.
That's a journalist?
That's what he testified at, and that is an inversion of the rule that every single journalist on the planet operates by. When journalists talk to officials, they assume that unless the official says, by the way, this is off the record, that everything that person says is going to be on the record. But Tim Russert obviously believes that it's more important to protect his relationships with those who have power than to perform his duties as a journalist. So it shouldn't end up being too surprising that it turns out that Meet the Press over the last couple of years has been, with the exception of Fox News Sunday, which is a whole other question, Fox News, that Meet the Press has been the one that has been really the most imbalanced toward the right. And since the November election, they really haven't changed at all. Some of the other shows, as I said, ABC News This Week has become more balanced. Even Fox News Sunday has started to invite more Democrats on since the elections in November. But Meet the Press really hasn't. They've been the one that has been the most static. They continue to invite more Republicans than Democrats, more conservative journalists than progressive journalists. And since they really set the tone for not only all the other programs, but really much of the journalism that comes out of Washington, that's where a lot of the problems can really be seen.
And so when you looked at things like, you looked at guests, you looked at the journalists, and you looked at the panel piece of that, and are you saying in all three of those categories, Meet the Press is still doing business as usual?
They are. They tend to have more. We looked at the panels and how often they were unbalanced, if they had, you know, two Democrats and one Republican or vice versa. And what we found is that is that I think almost three times as often you'll find a panel that's tilted to the right, where the conservatives outnumber the progressives, than you will a panel that's tilted to the left. And that still happens more often on Meet the Press. They're still inviting more Republican elected and administration officials. They're still inviting more conservative journalists than progressive journalists. So despite the fact that they have in the past said, oh, you know, it's just this way because the Republicans are in charge, now that we have a divided government, with Democrats in charge of Congress and Republicans in charge of the White House, they haven't seen fit to change. It'll be interesting to see what would happen if a Democrat wins the White House in 2008. Are they still going to invite more Republicans on? If they've said that it's because the Republicans are in power now that we have this imbalance, well, then assumedly they would start inviting more Democrats on and have a show that's imbalanced toward the left.
Well, I think that the argument will be, if the Democrats gain the White House and maintain control of the House and the Senate, then it will be, well, in fairness, since you all are all in majority, then we're still going to have to do more Republicans because it's not fair because they're the minority.
Yeah, that very well might happen.
I suspect that's what their defense is going to be. I'm talking to Paul Waldman. He's a senior fellow at Media Matters for America. We're talking about the report, If It's Sunday, It's Still Conservative, How the Right Continues to Dominate Sunday Talk Shows. My name is Liz Brown. Stay with me.
Good morning, St. Louis. For today, mostly cloudy skies with a high in the upper 70s. For this evening, partly cloudy with a low around 50. For Thursday, partly cloudy, becoming mostly sunny by the afternoon with a high in the upper 70s. And Friday, mostly cloudy in the morning, a chance for showers with a high in the mid-70s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 63 degrees under cloudy skies. Lambert Fields reporting 63 as well. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. It's up next. I'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the top of the 9 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
What America needs is affordable health insurance.
Finding affordable health insurance for you and your family, it's on everyone's mind right now. If you're self-employed, it's on your mind too. One of the things we face as entrepreneurial Americans is finding affordable health insurance. Well, I've found a company you can call right now and get affordable health insurance. Midwest National Life Insurance Company of Tennessee. Write this number down. 877-652-7793. That's 877-652-7793. Midwest specializes in helping entrepreneurs of all kinds. Those of us who run small businesses or don't get health insurance where we work, to protect our families with affordable health insurance. Call 877-652-7793. Not available in all states. Association membership is required in most states. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Exclusions and limitations apply.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me weekday afternoons from 2 till 4 on AM 920 WGNU. And I look forward to hearing from you. If you have problems with a personal, work, or family relationship, call me at 1-800-DR-LAURA. That's 1-800-DR-LAURA for the issues that matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU. And for the personal issues that matter most, join me, Dr. Laura, now from 2 to 4 every weekday afternoon. Then go do the right thing.
Be in the know as you're on the go with Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call.
Oh, there have been times that I thought I could last for long. But now I think I'm able. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gon' come. Oh, yes it will.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. I want to give you a reminder that in the next hour, the 9 o'clock hour, I will be joined by Faiz Shakir, and we're going to be talking about the warrantless searches of the FBI and now how it is now time for Congress, given everything that's going on with the Attorney General's office, the lies and deceptions, how we need to change that. That's going to be my conversation in the next hour. Right now, I'm having a conversation with Paul Waldman, Senior Fellow at Media Matters for America. We're talking about this report. If it's Sunday, it's still conservative, how the right continues to dominate the Sunday talk shows. Paul, let's talk about Fox. Let's talk about Fox.
Well, Fox News Sunday, for people who don't know, I think it's broadcast on Fox News stations, and it's also on the Fox News Channel cable station. And there's been a controversy recently among a lot of progressives questioning whether or not Democrats should go on Fox at all. I know that there are people who, people of goodwill on both sides of this question among Democrats. Some people say that, you only legitimize Fox, whether it's Fox News Sunday or any other program on Fox when you go on there.
And there's a conversation and a controversy brewing within the Congressional Black Caucus, the CBC, that they are now attempting to, and black journalists all over the country are getting up in arms about this, to foster a relationship and be able to, Fox has asked them to come on their network to do a regular series, and given what Fox has done with people of African descent, that's a huge controversy. And they're being told the CBC should not legitimize Fox by being part of Fox.
Exactly. And there's a question about the CBC sponsoring a presidential debate that might be on Fox. They're talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
And there was just the big issue of the debate that was going to take place in Nevada that was sponsored by Fox, that eventually, a couple of the presidential candidates said they didn't want to participate in if it was going to be Fox, and it got canceled. In any case, there's certainly no shortage of Democrats in Congress who are willing to go on Fox. What we see with Fox News Sunday, it's actually an interesting contrast. They did change since the election too. They've always been kind of the most imbalanced of all the Sunday shows. A greater proportion of Republicans and conservatives than any other shows.
And truly fake progressives.
Well, yeah, that's the other part of it, the whole question of what a Fox News liberal really is. Generally speaking, on most of the programs, they bring on someone who, you know, they call a Democratic strategist or whatever, but it's often someone who's basically there to bash Democrats, mm-hmm. Even though they claim to be a Democrat themselves. What we see on Fox News Sunday is that since the election, they've actually started to bring on more Democratic elected officials. But one of the things that happens there, you know, we talked about the roundtable. The first half of the show will be interviews with some members of Congress and things like that. And then the second half of the show will be the roundtable, the Fox News roundtable. The other shows, sometimes those roundtables are balanced and sometimes they aren't. The Fox News roundtable is always imbalanced. They have on there usually two or sometimes even three conservatives. It'll be sometimes Britt Hume, who's an anchor on Fox but is a conservative guy who's not unafraid to show his conservative opinions. Someone like, say, Mort Kondracki or Fred Barnes or Bill Kristol, very, very conservative guys, who are then matched up with who? Well, usually it's someone like Mara Liasson from NPR, mm-hmm. who is a reporter who works very hard to not let anything that looks like a liberal opinion pass her lips.
That's fair.
Then you have Juan Williams, who actually probably single-handedly makes Fox News the one of these shows that has the highest representation of African Americans, just because he's there every
just
week.
He's black, so yeah. we got that going for him, so he's black.
And the thing about him is that, you know, he's a kind of a complicated figure. He's certainly not the equivalent of somebody like Bill Kristol, who is always going to be giving the most conservative opinion you can think of. Williams is someone who sometimes is quite progressive, and on other issues he'll be very critical of Democrats. But the one thing you can say about that program is the fact that he's there every week. Even though he's outnumbered, usually 2-1 and sometimes 3-1, at least there's the opportunity that at some point a progressive opinion is going to be raised. Even though it's a rigged game, at least you can grant Fox News Sunday that they do have some progressive representation at some point.
And they have a black person.
Yes.
They have a black person. Because on Meet the Press, we got a whole lot of black reporters when we had the Katrina thing. So it's like Meet the Press says, okay, this is a black issue, let me bring in some black people. But that you don't see any black faces at all.
Right. And overall, the shows are extraordinarily white and male. There are... You know, if, for instance, you can pick out a few people who get on who do bring those numbers up a little. You know, Fareed Zakaria is Asian, and he's often on this week. Gene Robinson from the Washington Post is African-American, and sometimes he gets on Meet the Press, you know, every few months. But by and large, the typical program is a bunch of white guys talking.
And older white guys.
Yes, that's true, too.
So who are some of the more frequent guests that we see all the time?
Well, it is kind of a cast of usual suspects. The most frequent guest over the past 10 years has been John McCain, which should surprise no one who actually watches these shows. He has been on over the last 10 years, I think, around just under 150 times on these programs. Mm. The interesting thing about him is that he's always interviewed by himself. Now, I assume that that's probably a demand that he makes, but they're happy to assent to it. And the message that sends when he gets interviewed by himself, as opposed to some other member of Congress who might get interviewed with a person from the opposing party sitting next to them, is that his opinions are so important that he doesn't need to be counteracted by someone, that he sort of stands outside and above partisanship. Now, the truth is, of course, that John McCain is a very conservative Republican, despite this reputation that he has as this maverick independent. But he's the most common guest, although in the last 2 years he got beaten out by Joe Biden. Who is probably the Democrat who gets on more than any other over the whole last decade. And then you have people like Condoleezza Rice.
Is that because he's clean?
He's clean and articulate.
He's clean and articulate. And
you know, frankly, Biden is—he's certainly articulate, and he can talk and talk. And I think that part of the thing that happens, you know, without making any kind of a judgment about what sort of a Democrat Joe Biden is, I think there's something inherently problematic about the fact that it is the same people over and over again. That every week it's John McCain and Joe Biden and Joe Lieberman and Lindsey Graham and a few of those people
Arlen Specter, who get on
over and over.
Arlen Specter.
And you know, when there was an article written about this report in a newspaper a week or two ago, and the executive producer of Face the Nation said, oh, well, you know, okay, so Lindsey Graham gets all the time, but we love Lindsey Graham. He's terrific. And – you know, there's a and this is, I think, what's often their defense when you talk about the narrow range of voices that are presented is, well, you know, we there are certain people who we know are, you know, are articulate and can present their opinions in a way that's compelling. And, you know, even though this is not a jazzy show, we want to have something that's as interesting as possible. And, you know, we know that if we bring on McCain and Graham and Biden, that they'll provide an interesting explication of what the positions of the two parties are. But the fact is, you know, that really doesn't hold water. I live in Washington, D.C. Believe me, this town is crawling with people who would give their right arms to be on the shows. And they are, there are literally thousands of them who are also clean and articulate and have plenty of things to say and, you know, would be interesting guests. But the Rolodexes that the shows operate from are extremely small. And they tend to bring on the same people over and over and over again. And you can say, well, okay, you know, Condoleezza Rice gets on 30 times over the past 2 years. And that's reasonable because, you know, she is the Secretary of State and we want the shows to, you know, question the administration and what they're doing. But, you know, there are 50 Democratic senators and 233 Democratic members of the House of Representatives, and most of them don't ever get on. It's the same people over and over again. So that's yet another way where how the range of voices that gets on there is extremely narrow.
Well, and you mentioned Face the Nation. Face the Nation had a lot of neutrals.
Yeah, they don't do the panels. Their show is only a half an hour, while the other ones are an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And so they tend not to do the journalist panels. They just do a couple of interviews. And when they bring on journalists, it tends to be reporters, people like, you know, John Harwood of the Wall Street Journal, who's a reporter, who will come on and do an interview with the host, Bob Schieffer, of a newsmaker. So they stay away, generally speaking, from the opinion journalists. The other shows, Meet the Press and This Week and Fox News Sunday, have a lot of those opinion journalists on there, but in all of those cases, with the exception of This Week in the last few months, they tend to be much more tilted to the right.
And in terms of this phenomena, this right-wing presence, is it a result of the 30 years of a plan to put people in place or to create this belief that the media is liberal, but or has there been this whole shift with the media, the huge media buyouts and the reduction of the number of alternative places out there for people to listen to? Has that had an impact on or is that also a factor in why we're seeing so much of just one voice or hearing so much of one voice?
I think it may well be. I mean, this is it's a very complicated question when you start to get into the why.
Okay, and I want you to hold that because we have to take a break. I'm talking to Paul Waldman. He's a senior fellow at Media Matters for America, and we're discussing their report, how the right continues to dominate the Sunday talk shows. If it's Sunday, it's still conservative. My name is Liz Brown. I'll be back after this break. Stay with us.
Are you one of those people who look at somebody who's big boned and think that's just a euphemism for Twinkie enriched? Are you sick of the idea that we can go to war in Serbia and bomb the crud out of them, but we should stay out of Iraq? If the whole entire pop culture thing, Britney Spears, Super Bowl commercials, and all that stuff gets on your nerves, well, guess what? It gets on mine, too. So if you want someone to listen and understand, listen to me, Brett Rosen, every Tuesday, 10 a.m. on WGNU, 920 a.m.
If you have suffered roof damage from the recent severe weather, Phil Person Roofing is still a name you can trust. Licensed and certified for commercial and residential jobs. Phil Person Roofing offers free estimates for all work. To contact Person Roofing, call this special emergency number, 602-1047. That's 602-1047. Phil Person Roofing, 602-1047.
It's time for a WGNU Global News Update brought to you by Great Harvest Bread Company. I'm Peyton Colston. Tuesday, the U.S. Senate voted down an amendment to the supplemental funding bill for the war in Iraq. The amendment would have deleted the timeline for a U.S. troop pullout. President Bush has said he'll veto the timeline anyway. Meanwhile, White House spokesman Tony Snow, a survivor of colon cancer 2 years ago, is now fighting liver cancer. And some high-tech news, new computer software developed by a student at Stanford University allows computer users to click on links, highlight text, and scroll by simply looking at the computer screen. The idea behind the new software is to reduce occurrences of carpal tunnel syndrome and other ailments resulting from repeated use of a computer mouse. And initial sales figures from Microsoft show its new operating system, Windows Vista, made a splash in its debut. In the first month of Windows Vista's general availability, sales exceeded 20 million licenses, more than doubling the initial pace of sales for its predecessor, Windows XP. I'm Peyton Colston, and that's this hour's WGNU Global News Update, brought to you by Great Harvest Bread Company.
With a little time and a lot of love, the bakers at the Olivet Great Harvest Bread Store have transformed their signature dough into bread bunnies for Easter. That's right, a rabbit made entirely of honey whole wheat bread. It's a healthier choice for your Easter baskets. It also makes a charming centerpiece for your holiday dinner. Order yours today, 314-991-0049. That's the Great Harvest Bread Store, 9449 Olive Boulevard, the Olivet Great Harvest Bread Store. Making people happy, one rabbit, one loaf at a time.
Around the world, behind the story. It's the award-winning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
My name is Liz Brown. I'm having a conversation this hour with Paul Waldman, Senior Fellow at Media Matters for America. We're talking about Media Matters for America's report. If it's Sunday, it's still conservative. And, Paul, I want to get to a couple of callers here before we get back to our conversation. Max, you have a question or comment for Paul Waldman?
A quick comment. What I've noticed that they do on the Fox Sunday morning show, and usually it's from Britt Hume, and your guests will probably know what I'm talking about, of course, and you probably notice it. Britt Hume will ask a question, and when he does not care for the answer, it's a, you know, he will right away say, well, but what about this? Or and he'll change the subject. And I don't know if your guest remembers this, and this is going back before the present host. I think Tony Snow was the host then. Barney Frank was a guest on maybe two occasions years ago. And Britt Hume started, and I can't recall the question, but Barney Frank answered it, and Hume was cutting him off repeatedly. And Barney Frank said sternly but politely, can I be allowed to finish this question?
And let me let my guest.
You may not care for my answer, but you invited me on here. Let me finish it.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
All right. And did your study address any of the nature of how they behaved once they got on there to people on the other side of the issue?
We didn't go into that in any kind of a quantitative way, but Britt Hume is an interesting case because he is the main anchor on Fox News. And on Sundays, he goes on Fox News Sunday and gives his very conservative opinions. Now, none of the other networks would ever allow their anchors to do that kind of thing. They would say that it compromises their objectivity, but Fox is different. They're quite comfortable with having their main anchor give his conservative opinions. And you can also see that on his nightly show, Special Report with Britt Hume. And one of the interesting dynamics there on Fox News Sunday is that I don't know what happens off the air, but on the air, he and Juan Williams have a very tense relationship because
everything that comes out of
Juan Williams' mouth is greeted with a kind of withering contempt from Britt Hume.
Exactly right.
Where he says, you know, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Exactly. And I keep expecting that. You often watch him and think,
boy, one of these days, Williams is just going to reach out and clock him.
That's one of the reasons you get the popcorn and you sit it there and you watch it because with the anticipation that there is going to be a throwdown. There is absolutely going to be a throwdown because of Britt's contempt, obvious contempt for everything that Juan says. And again, Juan is no progressive.
Yeah, he's not exactly a raving liberal, but it's really quite something to see. And I think it shows how Fox really is just very, very different. They are one of the interesting things about them is, you know, they were always talking about how they're fair and balanced and everybody else has a liberal bias except for them. And I think that their talk about fair and balanced, they do it partly just to drive liberals crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have a fundamentally different model than every other television network. They're quite open about their partisanship, and, you know, the Fox News is a world in which Republicans are always the heroes and Democrats are always the villains. You know, you can say, well, maybe they have every right to do that, certainly, and it would be nice if there was a liberal network, too.
Do they have the right, every right to do that? Since we own the airwaves, do they have a right to do that?
Well, it's a complicated question, and you know, first of all, although Fox News Sunday is broadcast over the Fox broadcast stations, the cable channel is a cable channel, and the rules are slightly different. Although there haven't been, you know, this question of what sorts of responsibilities the fact that we do own the airwaves imposes on those media companies that use them is something that really hasn't come up all that much recently in Supreme Court cases. And there are a lot of people who are pushing, for instance, for a reintroduction of the Fairness Doctrine,
mm-hmm.
which disappeared in the 1980s. And you know, there's a good case to be made on both sides of that question, I think. But a lot of these questions are still open, and we have this rapidly changing media world, and the law and the regulations really haven't caught up to it yet. So I think that you know, the question of whether or not it's okay for a network to have one particular ideology like that. Again, you know, I think that people would be less upset about Fox if they were a little more honest about it. You know, there are a number of problems with Fox. I mean, one of the things that we do at Media Matters is that we track not only the mainstream media but also the conservative media, and every day we find horribly objectionable things that go out over the Fox airwaves. Not only things that are offensive and insulting, but also things that are just factually wrong. I mean, they are the most factually challenged of all the news networks. That's not to say that ABC, NBC, and CBS don't get things wrong all the time, because they do, and we correct those too. But Fox is really in a league of their own when it comes to being fact challenged. And so there's nothing about being a conservative or a conservative network that necessarily means that you have to ignore facts and get things wrong so much as Fox does. They could be a more responsible network and have the same ideology that they do, but they haven't done that yet.
Harry, do you have a question for my guest, Paul Waldman?
Yes, good morning, Liz. Good morning, Paul. There's a company owned by a consortium of TV networks and wire services, and the name of that company is Voters News Service. Is Paul aware of that organization?
The one that does the exit polls, yes.
You are?
Yeah.
And what's your question or comment about that?
Well, since 64, I understand that vote tabulation for national elections has been handled not by the government, but by private companies lacking any official oversight at all. And I understand that all of the votes go into this particular news service, and nobody gets to see any of the votes or anything.
All right. Thanks for your comment.
Thank you.
Is that something that you can comment on?
Well, that's partly correct. They do the networks handle all the through this consortium handle the exit polls. And, you know, there were controversies after the 2000 election about whether the exit polls were accurate, and they've been they instituted a new system in 2004, but the actual tabulation of actual votes basically happens on this on 50 different systems, one for every state, and then in every county it's a little bit different. It's an incredible mishmash of different systems using different methods, but the actual counts tend to are officially done by boards of elections, and even though it's something we seldom hear about, because what we tend to rely on election night and the next day is what happens in the exit polls and whatever returns they can get within that short time period. So although there is an official count that comes from the 50 different state boards of elections, it's something that people, by the time they actually get around to completing it, we've already kind of moved on, because it is the exit polls on which the networks rely in order to make those calls on election night. And they can do it more or less responsibly. If exit polls are done well, they can be very accurate. But part of the problem is that we don't have a national system, and so there's so many, you know, there are thousands and thousands of counties, and there are so many opportunities for mismanagement and for outright fraud. And that's part of the problem with our election system. It is remarkable that in, you know, the richest country in the world, we can't seem to get to a system where everybody votes and you don't have to wait online for 3 hours and you know that your vote will be counted. But there's a whole reform movement in that area, too, that people could get involved in if they wanted.
Let me get to one or two more callers here. Rick, you have a question for my guest, Paul Waldman.
Yes, I do. First of all, I'm a news junkie. I love Sunday morning, the Sunday morning news shows. Now, my question is this. If we know that Fox News has, Fox Broadcasting has a slant to the Republican Party, and they truly push the Republican agenda, can we really call it news, or is there some type of way we could put a disclaimer on it saying that this is Fox's opinion, or this is a not propaganda, but someone's opinion versus news, because so many people seem to get their information from Fox. That
okay. All right. Thanks for that. And is it news? Is it? How do you define news nowadays, Paul?
Well, that's a good question, and you can define it in any number of ways. I mean, I think that in an ideal world, we'd have each one of us would have many, many hours in a day to get news from all different kinds of sources. And maybe we would get some very dry reports, say, from the Associated Press, the kind of who, what, where, when piece of the news. And then we'd get some analysis that maybe had a little more of an opinion attached to it. And then maybe we'd get some real opinions, and we'd look at conservatives and liberals. But how many people have the time to do that every day? Very, very few. And there may be a few of us out there who are such incredible news junkies that we spend our entire day finding out what's in the news, but most people don't. You know, the most common way that people get their news still today is local news. The local television news is still has more a bigger audience than any other news forum, and that is, you know, the least substantive. The one that is the most is going to give you the least amount of information and enable you not enable you to be an active citizen in really a responsible way. And so, but you know, and people don't even pay much attention to that. They may have it on while they're cooking dinner for their kids. And let's face it, you know, not everybody has the time in their day to really do what's necessary to be the kind of citizen that we might all like to be. So given that, I think it's incumbent upon the news organizations that do have audiences to be as responsible as possible. And yes, you know, you can say, well, what Fox is offering isn't really news as we traditionally understand it. It's kind of an amalgam of news and opinion.
Isn't that a danger, though, when we start moving away from in an acceptance way and in a practice of into the world of opinion as opposed to the world of news?
I think it can be problematic, particularly if what you think you're getting is not that mix of opinion and news. And if you listen to a lot of people who watch Fox News, like, say, the people in the White House, they think that that's just the truth and that everything else must be a lie.
Where can people get a copy of the If It's Sunday, It's Still Conservative report?
They can go to SundayShowReports.com, and they can also get it through our organization's website, which is MediaMatters.org.
And it's a great site. I really, really enjoy reading it and getting the information out of it. I want to thank you very much, Paul Waldman, for joining me this morning on the Wake Up Call.
It's been my pleasure.
Take care. Listen, folks, this is Liz Brown. In the next hour, we're going to be talking about the FBI. We're going to be talking about, you know what, it's time for Congress to put some limits on these warrantless FBI searches. You're going to hear some of the things that the FBI is doing, some of the things that they're saying. You don't want to miss this discussion, particularly in light of Alberto Gonzalez investigation stuff that's going on. My name is Liz Brown. Stay tuned for the next hour. I'll be back after this news break.
There's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Feel my brothers talking.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever. More families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
For the issues that matter most, it's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Aldinger. A mammogram may not be enough for some women. The American Cancer Society has a new recommendation for women with a high risk of developing the disease. Here's ABC News national correspondent Jim Hickey.
They can sound loud and scary.
MRI machines. But for the first time, the American Cancer Society says up to one in every four women should get MRI screening in addition to mammography exams, because MRIs can detect breast cancer that mammograms might miss. At most risk are perhaps 1.3 million American women who have a high lifetime chance of developing breast cancer. Jim Hickey, ABC News.
Iranian officials plan to release one of the 15 British sailors it's been holding. It could because the British government has made public what has already been shown to Tehran, that the sailors were not in Iranian waters when they were taken into custody.
A British admiral said today that the capture of the sailors is unjustified and wrong, and Britain is demanding their safe and speedy return. Meanwhile, the U.S. carriers will continue their operations here, clearly meant to send a message to Iran.
ABC's Martha Raddatz on the USS Eisenhower. First the House, now the Senate's given President Bush an ultimatum. You want more money for Iraq, you set a date to bring the troops home. No dice, says the president.
The Senate vote sets up a confrontation between House and Senate, both of which have now voted for a troop withdrawal timetable, and a president who's promised a veto. Vice President Dick Cheney came to the Capitol to break a tie on behalf of the president if there was one, but it never came to that.
ABC's Vic Ratner at the Capitol. There was a peaceful ending to a hostage standoff in the Philippines. A daycare center owner held a busload of students and teachers at gunpoint outside Manila City Hall. Wanted better housing and more education for a center which is located in the poorest part of the city. This is ABC News.
Sealer takes two and a glass of Corbett.
Canyon.
Corbett, it's been years.
It's got great reviews.
Yeah, and Corbett has this new twist-off closure, so every glass is perfect.
Incredible Cabernet.
And a Chardonnay for me.
Sure, still have Corbett's premium wine cask from our last game. After it's open, keeps wine fresh for 6 weeks.
Won't be here that long. Nothing beats this Cabernet. Or my Royal Flush.
Corbett Canyon. One great taste, two convenient choices. The new twist-off closure and the premium wine cask. Corbett Canyon Vineyard, San Luis Obispo, California.
I don't want to grow up. I'm a Toys R Us kid.
Right now at Toys R Us, when you buy toys, you'll get toys free. Buy any Little Tykes toy up to $24.99 and get one free. And Fisher-Price dollhouses and dollhouse accessories are buy one and get one free. Plus, buy two and get a third free on select Lego toys. Hurry in or visit ToysRUs.com, the world's greatest toy store. Now at $325 to $331. Limited quantities available. No range checks. Continental U.S. only. Free item must be of equal or lesser value to the lowest price item purchase. Certain restrictions and exclusions apply. See store for details.
I want to be a Toys R Us kid.
Toys R Us.
Microsoft is unveiling a new version of its Xbox 360. This one has a bigger hard drive and a souped-up high-def video connection. The company wants to broaden the appeal of its popular console beyond video gamers. A new and, some would say, alarming marketing tactic for dealers of one of the most addictive drugs.
Whether it's smoked or snorted, methamphetamine use is down, according to U.S. drug control officials. Confronted with a drop of nearly 50% among first-time meth users, dealers looking for new ways to reverse the trend are selling candy-flavored methamphetamine with names like Strawberry Quick. Authorities say flavored meth has cropped up in the West, the Southwest, Minnesota, and Missouri. One drug agent discovered a dealer marketing red meth as an energy drink. Bob Schmidt, ABC News.
Well, here's another reason to have a little dark chocolate or have a nice glass of red wine. The flavonoids in both may help you avoid heart disease, especially if you're a postmenopausal woman. I'm Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU Newsroom.
Here's this hour's WGNU News report. I'm Peyton Colston. In the news this morning, embattled Overland Mayor Ann Persner may have presided over her last city council meeting. That's because the meeting scheduled for last Monday night never was officially convened. The council majority clashed with her supporters, as they have for the entire 11 months Persner's been in office. Persner refused to allow a vote on whether to settle a lawsuit with three Overland police officers who were suing the city, and dismissed the meeting without ever calling it to order after the conflicting factions began to become unruly. Persner's trying to retain her position in the April 3rd recall election. She needs a simple majority to do that. Voter turnout in the city is expected to run high. In other news, a graffiti message on a brick wall in St. Louis's Fox Park neighborhood is gone. Sunday, somebody spray-painted the words, "No Tears for McEntee," on a building near Russell Boulevard and Ohio Streets. The message apparently refers to Kirkwood Sergeant William McEntee, who was shot and killed in the line of duty in July of 2005. The trial of Kevin Johnson, who's accused of the death, is getting underway this week. Block captains in the Fox Park Neighborhood Association went to their neighborhood stabilization officer, who was able to get Operation Brightside workers to scrub and sandblast the message away. Finally, for this hour, a man from the Lincoln County town of Moscow Hills is accused of stealing a mobile home. 54-year-old Ernest Swan runs a company that stores mobile homes in Troy, Missouri. Back in the year 2000, police say Swan agreed to store a $40,000 mobile home. Then 2 years ago, he allegedly moved the mobile home from the storage site to Moscow Mills and began renting it to tenants. Swan's in custody on $25,000 bond. That's this hour's WGNU News Update. I'm Peyton Colston for AM 920.
Good morning, St. Louis. 6 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. Let's take a look at your forecast and your traffic for this 9 o'clock hour. Eastbound 44 from Lewis through Antire Road. Look for stop-and-go traffic due to an accident. Two lanes are blocked. It's near Antire Road. It's two left lanes, so expect some delays. Northbound 55 from Herculaneum through Route Z. Look for road construction. Left lanes closed. Westbound 5570 on the Poplar Street Bridge is looking good. Westbound 64 from Bow Avenue into the 5570 merge looks good. Westbound Kingbridge traffic's on the move into the landing from the Illinois Bank. Northbound Route 3 onto the Poplar Street Bridge. No problems on that ramp. Eastbound 40 between the Boone Bridge through Clarkson Valley. Look for no delays. Eastbound 70 from Bryan Road through Highway K is on the move. And then again from just east of Earth City Expressway through St. Charles Rock Road, expect no problem there. Northbound 270 at 44 is on the move, and as well as at 70, expect some slowdowns into the 70 exit lanes. And northbound 55 is looking good from Butler Hill into the 255-270 interchange. That is a look at your traffic. Now let's take a look at your forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Friday. For today, look forward to mostly cloudy, chance of showers, partly sunny this afternoon. Highs in the upper 70s. This evening, partly cloudy with a low in the upper 50s. Thursday, partly sunny in the morning, becoming mostly cloudy throughout the day with a high in the upper 70s. Thursday evening, mostly cloudy, chance of showers, low in the upper 50s. Then on Friday, mostly cloudy, 50% chance of showers, highs in the mid-70s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 65 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 65 degrees as well and cloudy skies. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call. That's up next. We'll take another look at your news and your weather in the 10 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
All men are created equal. Yet many
are denied equal treatment. And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown, and we have a lot of business to tend to. Probably as we speak right now, there's someone somewhere in Congress that is talking to or about something in the Justice Department. Problems in the Justice Department, be it Abu Ghraib, trials at Guantanamo, quaint little positions on torture, Alberto Gonzalez, or the FBI. We're going to take a moment, an hour this morning, to talk about, to focus in on the FBI and warrantless searches. I believe things happen for a reason. It's no coincidence to me that this Alberto Gonzalez story is coming up at the same time we're hearing amazing abuses with the FBI and these warrantless searches. And we're going to have a discussion about that with Faiz Shakir, Research Director for the Progress Report and Think Progress. .org, and he's at the Center for American Progress, joining us from Washington, D.C. You don't want to miss this conversation. Stay with me.
Recently in St. Louis, some changes were made in healthcare providers, and we at ConnectCare want you to know that sometimes change can be good. ConnectCare, still connected to the community. ConnectCare is now your specialty care clinic hub. If you or your loved one is dealing with kidney disease, you can contact one of ConnectCare's renal specialists at our renal clinic, dedicated to improving the quality of life and providing optimal care for patients with chronic and acute renal disease. At ConnectCare, we have 14 specialty care clinics to serve your healthcare needs. Our specialty care clinic hub includes specialty clinics dealing with arthritis, ENT, GI, orthopedics, and a women's specialty clinic. At ConnectCare, the physicians and staff at our specialty clinics are committed to the philosophy that the best care is provided by those with the greatest commitment to their community. ConnectCare. Still connected to the community.
Hi, I'm Randy Grimm. Join me Fridays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. for Animal Tales on AM 920 WGNU. Animals have always mattered to me, so that's why we discuss the issues that matter most to you and your animal companions. Join us as our special guests and I examine puppy mills, parrots, turtles, ferrets, and answer your questions about pet care. For 2 hours of fur, friends, and fun every week, join me, Randy Grimm, for Animal Tales, Fridays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on AM 920 WGNU. Woof.
This is the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown. Don't leave home without it.
Oh, Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back to the wake-up call. My name is Liz Brown. This hour, I'm having a discussion about warrantless FBI searches with Faiz Shakir. He's a research director for the Progress Report and thinkprogress.org. And all of this is at the Center for American Progress. He's joining us from Washington, D.C. Faiz, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm outstanding. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you.
How do we get to a place of, how have we gotten to a place of warrantless searches in the FBI?
Well, it's a tough question to answer, but it's not that difficult if you think about the administration we have in place. I think it largely has to do with the ideology of this administration and particularly their post 9/11 mindset that they were willing to sacrifice a great deal of civil liberties and civil rights in favor of what they saw as being, quote, tough on terror. And so that whole ideology has kind of trickled down and influenced a whole variety of different things that the administration has done, and particularly with regards to its warrantless spying efforts. And now we see that they're violating their own rules on phone records. So, you know, it's pervading all of that because they really don't believe that the rules apply to them. They feel that they're in this kind of zone where they can do whatever they want.
And let's talk about that component of doing whatever they want. What are the rules right now with respect to the FBI and warrantless searches?
Yeah, well, there are currently rules that were passed as part of the Patriot Act that require that the FBI has to go through certain notice requirements of letting Congress know when it is going to use certain powers, and the particular powers that we're talking about here are these so-called national security letters. And these national security letters are a very powerful thing because they allow the executive branch, the FBI, the Department of Justice, to get information from the general public, things like phone records, without going through the judicial process. They don't have to go and get a warrant.
It's not just your phone records. It's your email.
It's
your bank, and it's your financial records.
That's right.
It's all
of those things. It could be anything that the Justice Department or the FBI feels they need to conduct an investigation. And so this is a very important power because it allows them to skirt the normal warrant process. But when they use this particular power, they're supposed to let Congress know when they're doing it and why it meets the specific need. And they have not been doing that. And that's what we just found out this week, that they've been ignoring their own rules when they've been demanding telephone and financial records about private citizens.
And let's go back just a little bit further here. Did the FBI, prior to 9/11, have the authority for these warrantless searches through the national security letters?
Yeah, through the national security letters, they've always had this kind of authority. It's existed in different forms, but it's always been there. After 9/11.
What changed?
After 9/11 really did, and of course the mindset of the administration changed, and so they decided that they were going to expand this use of national security letters. And I mean, if you think back and look at, there's been a lot written about Dick Cheney and the power of the vice presidency and kind of his view of executive power, and it is that nobody should tell the president what to do. He can largely do whatever he wants. And so this mentality has been applied to national security letters. So they've expanded their use greatly and have said, we're going to do this because it allows us to conduct these investigations without having to go through the judicial process, without having to report to Congress. So they like this power.
And if we do a little compare and contrast here, it's my understanding that in the year 2000, the FBI had issued only 8,500 of these NSL requests, but by 2005, they've issued 47,000 for a total of 143,000+. Is that right?
It's incredible. And what the report said the other day is that they've actually conducted like 10,000 of them have been violating their own rules.
Do we even know if this 143,000 number is accurate? Could there
be
more?
No, we don't know. It could be underestimating. I mean, largely this is done by a survey, so they look at, you know, how are they using it in certain instances. But we haven't done a full comprehensive search, and who knows if they're hiding things from Congress.
So let's talk about these 10,000 that we now know as a result of this report that they violated their own rules. Talk to us about some of these violations and some of the cases that have come that have been revealed as a result of this.
Well, we don't know the particulars of the cases. We only know that the FBI director Robert Mueller decided to tell Congress that it's been using these flawed procedures over the past 2 years to pry into individuals' phone records, financial records, as we talked about, emails, and that these violations have circumvented the FBI's own rules. So they were pretty forthright about saying that there was kind of no basis to compel these this information. They acknowledged that much. So that was a good thing. I think we have to say that. But we don't know, like you said, for what purposes they're using this, whether they're storing this information, continue to keep it in the database somewhere. I mean, the FBI is now acknowledging that most of this information is relating to individuals who have no connection to terror.
Well, one of the lines from this report is that our findings suggest that a significant number of the NSL-related possible intelligence oversight board violations throughout the FBI have not been identified or reported by FBI personnel. What does that mean?
I mean, it means that there's no accountability over this. And you know, the Inspector General, Glenn Fine, said that, you know, that they've used these records to obtain 3,000 separate secret phone numbers, and they've used these letters, you know, hundreds and hundreds of times to get those records. So I think that we don't know exactly why they're doing it. They claimed it was for terror originally. Now we know it's not.
How do we know that it's not for terror?
Well, they've acknowledged that much. They've said that the reason they're coming forth and telling Congress about this and telling the public and this Inspector General report from the Department of Justice lays it out, says that many of these powers were used for non-terrorism-related cases, and that's contrary to what they said they were going to do and what they told Congress according to the Patriot Act, which required that they would only use these powers when there was a national security a reason for it.
Is their confession kind of like the child that keeps misbehaving, keeps misbehaving and wants the parent to, you know, you got to stop me because I'm not going to be able to stop myself? I mean, is that kind of what we have going on here? Because, I mean, it just appears like they're just going to keep doing this.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it. And the irony here is that when President Bush signed the Patriot Act just recently, I think it was the reauthorization of the Patriot Act, I think, last year, he actually issued a signing statement with that Patriot Act. And in that signing statement, he reserved the right to ignore the law with regards to the national security letters. So first of all, if you start with that basis, you start with the administration saying intend to follow the law, explicitly write that out in a signing statement, then it should come as no surprise that we're now finding out that they violated the law.
They're going to go buck wild because the guy in charge has said, you know what, I'm not following the law. Then they're going to be, well, why would I?
Exactly. That's what I was talking about earlier on about the mindset trickling down. It comes straight from the top. I mean, they've set the agenda at the top, and the people below, the FBI director and others, are simply following along.
And some people would say that, well, so what? So what? If you haven't done anything wrong, what's wrong with the FBI rooting through your bank account?
Well, this is how it all starts, right? It always starts with this argument that there's no problem until, of course, it happens to you personally or you experience it through somebody else where your own financial records end up on some terror watch list and somehow you can't board a plane or you can't travel across the country or your phone is being tapped and then suddenly they start going after you for cases unrelated to terror and suddenly start snooping on you because, you know, for whatever reason, your driver's license expired or something like that. You didn't file your tax form on time. Those kinds of things. And suddenly you're now ensnared in the net of the FBI and they're watching everything you're doing. I think in general, we have this right to privacy from from the federal government, and that's something that we've always held very dearly for hundreds and hundreds of years. It was one of the, I think, the predominant concepts that that came out of our founding fathers in the Constitution, was that we need to have this buffer between us and the federal government, because inherently we don't trust that if we give a great deal of power to the government, they'll use it properly.
Well, hasn't it gotten to a place that we, as a result of this whole terror watch list things, people are having difficulty doing simple things like even buying a car? Because if your name ends up on one of these lists, by law, car dealerships are supposed to they have a right not to sell you a car.
Yeah, and we've seen from these no-fly lists, you know, that they're all tons of regular, ordinary Americans are getting ensnared in that as well, and they're complaining about, hey, I can't fly on a plane because, you know, Bob Smith ended up on the terror watch list. So there are a whole host of problems that are disrupting ordinary Americans' lives, but even if they're not disrupting Americans' lives, the general concept of why this is wrong still holds, and that is that we should never, I think, hand over this great power to the federal government unfettered. I mean, that's why we have the system of checks and balances. That's what it's for, because we inherently don't trust that it'll be used properly, and we don't even know if it is being used properly right now.
And let me ask you this question. This is about these letters pertain to the bank accounts and the phone records, et cetera. What about the ability to search you physically without a warrant? Have we gotten to that place? Are we easing into that place? Or is that something that we should be concerned about, the expansion of these letters into including, I'm going to pat you down. No, I don't have a warrant. No, I don't have any probable cause, but I'm going to physically search your house. I'm going to physically search you.
Yeah, that power actually has existed for a little while. That's one of the arguments that the administration tried to use to justify this warrantless spying activity that was done by the National Security Agency. They said, well, because we can go and pat down people without warrants if the need arises under exigent circumstances, then we should also be able to go and snoop on your phone records. So that power actually does exist a little bit. It's used very rarely, especially because it's become kind of less useful in the modern age when most people are doing bad things through online activities, through financial records, through
email.
But
getting into my house, they're going to say, I have exigent circumstances to get into your house to search your house, or I have a warrant detailing what I need to do to go into your house. Are you telling me that that doesn't exist anymore for the FBI? The FBI can come into my house without a warrant and without exigent circumstances and search my stuff?
Well, not without exigent circumstances. They still have to make that case.
Right.
And who knows if they are or not. But,
right.
Under the Patriot Act, one of the things that it allowed is under these national security investigations, they FBI can actually come into your house and snoop around and then leave without ever telling you that they were there. I think
that's
that
right.
There's actually
okay.
a delay of like a month or two before they have to tell you.
Okay. Now, back to these letters. If a bank gets one of these letters that the FBI wants to search your account, my account, whoever account, the bank can't tell you, right?
That's right. Yeah, they're not supposed to be the ones to convey that information.
And the FBI, do they have to tell you that they've searched your bank account?
No. If they believe it's a national security investigation, then they can't compromise that investigation by telling you.
So
that's the rationale, at least.
Wow. 1-877-920-WGNU. My name is Liz Brown. I'm talking to the research director for the Progress Report and thinkprogress.org, Fayez Shakir, and he is joining us from Washington, D.C. My name is Liz Brown. We're talking about reining in warrantless searches. Please, let's try to do that. I'll be back after this break. Stay with me.
Get get a free Razor cell phone delivered free to your door. Don't want a free Razor? Then go to letstalk17.com and choose from hundreds of other free phones. Join 500,000 users who found the smartest way to buy their cell phones. Never pay retail again. At letstalk17.com, you can compare prices on phones and service plans from all the major carriers. Find the coolest new phone at the coolest price. Find the best current special offers. Read what folks have to say about their phones and plans. They actually rate and review their phones and service plans so you know which ones to pick. Do it all in the comfort of your own home. If your plan is ending, now's your chance. Try your new phone risk-free for 7 days with free 48-hour shipping. Letstalk17.com is the only way to get the absolute best deal possible. Right now, get a free Razor after $50 mail-in rebate. This is an exclusive online offer at letstalk17.com. New 2-year service plan agreement required. One-time wireless activation and early termination fees may apply. Go to letstalk17.com. That's letstalk17.com.
This is Mitch Washington of the St. Louis office of Edward Jones, located at 200 North Broadway downtown, inviting you to tune in to Radio Free St. Louis for the WGNU Stock Market Recap, weekday afternoons immediately following the 3:30 traffic update. Find out how your investments are doing and how the numbers on Wall Street are affecting you. That's the WGNU Stock Market Recap with me, Mitch Washington, weekday afternoons at 3:30 on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU.
The people, the issues affecting your life, right here, right now, on the award-winning Wake Up Call.
There's a new world coming, and it's just around the bend. There's a new world coming. This one's coming to an end. There's a new voice calling, and you can hear it if you try. And it's growing stronger with every day that passes by.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. I'm talking to Faiz Shakir, Research Director for the Progress Report and ThinkProgress.org at the Center for American Progress. He's joining us from Washington, D.C., and we're talking about warrantless FBI searches and national security letters. Faiz, what is Congress? Is Congress weighing in on this now?
Yeah, they're going after him pretty hard. Yesterday, FBI Director Robert Mueller testified before Congress. He was actually forced to go there and explain himself, particularly with respect to this illegal use, I think, of the national security letters. And he didn't really have too much to answer. In fact, Arlen Specter, who's the conservative ranking member of the committee, was very upset and said his answers that it's just a large bureaucracy and that there's a lot of things to look over just didn't cut it, said Arlen.
Wait a minute. Didn't he say, well, we missed it because there are just a whole lot of facts in these letters and we just missed that. Isn't that what his explanation was?
Yeah, exactly. It was that, you know, there's a lot of facts in there. There's thousands of facts, and we can't go and check all of these facts and find them all.
And the answer is, huh? What do you mean? Your job is to check that stuff. That's kind of what Arlen Specter, the Republican's response was.
That's exactly what he said. Yeah, he said that's your job. If you don't do it, who else is going to do it, right? That was a very interesting back and forth at the hearing, and you know we also learned the numbers that you talked about. You know, in 2000 there were only 8,500 national security letter requests. Then last year I think, or 2 years ago, there were 47,000, and now we're at 143,000. So we've gone from 8,500 to 143,000
that we know of. That we know of.
Yeah.
Because we know the number's not smaller.
No.
So the number could be larger than
that's
that.
That's right.
And so the purpose of these hearings, is it as a result, did these hearings come as a result of this report that came out?
Yes, that's right. It came as a result of this. They wanted to find out more about the FBI's implementation of these national security letters and whether they were, you know, get more of an understanding of what's going on.
So what's going to happen? I mean, what can happen?
The only thing that we heard is that Mueller said, you know, we've known, this is the FBI director, he said, we've known about this for a while, that there's been these legal lapses and that we're trying to correct it and we're doing all we can. And then we heard from Patrick Leahy, the chairman of the committee, saying that he still has very serious qualms. So I think the only thing that you're really going to see happen is that there's more pressure now from Congress. Before, there was really largely no accountability. If a report like this had come out, it would have gotten one day of press attention,
maybe,
and then it would have boiled over, right? And now, at least, you know, these stories keep going for a few days, and then Congress stays on it, and, you know, the more we learn more and more about it as time goes on.
And this, I guess, I don't know, out of the karma of what's going on in Washington right now, at the same time we have these Alberto Gonzalez hearings going on and investigations going on. Well, how does that weigh in on this issue?
Well, it's just yet another reason. There's a whole host of reasons for why Alberto Gonzalez has politicized the Department of Justice and also and managed it incompetently. I would say that the national security letters that we've been talking about are an example of how he's managed it incompetently. You know, he just hasn't been on the ball. He hasn't pressed hard for this. You know, if you have the FBI director and saying that, well, there's thousands of facts and I'm not accountable for the thousands of facts, That means that
It's worse than that. He's saying I shouldn't have to look at these facts. You know,
right.
you can't blame us for not looking at these facts to see whether what we're doing is legal.
Right. He said they're long and they contain thousands of facts. You know, I can't go there and do that. So to me, it signals that the top, Alberto Gonzalez, the Attorney General, isn't sending the message that this is important. Right.
Could it be something different than that, Fayez? Could it simply be that he thinks that the way they're doing it is right?
Yeah. I mean, that's possibly true as well, although Gonzalez has now come out in recent days and said he's very troubled by this, he's disturbed, he wants to correct it.
But this is the same guy that said that these whole rules against torture are quaint.
Yeah, exactly. We know that his intentions, we have reasons to doubt his intentions, let's say that. There are plenty of reasons to doubt this guy's intentions. And then the way, as you said, how he's politicized the Department of Justice and through this whole attorney's debacle that we're now learning about suggests that his intentions are more aligned with advancing the White House's political agenda rather than securing our civil liberties.
And if you can kind of like make it clear for us, where is the Justice Department in the scheme of places in our government? We have the executive branch, the legislative branch, the judicial branch. Where does the Justice Department fall under?
Well, it's the chief law enforcement branch of the whole government.
So, but it's part of the executive branch, right?
It's part of the executive branch. So it's part of the president's powers. He appoints the attorney general. So this is all within the president's realm, of course, and separate from Congress and the judicial branch. So this is all part of the president's powers. And I think that he's placed into power an individual in Alberto Gonzalez, who is more willing to just follow along with dictates from the top rather than to secure and maintain the rights that we already have.
And basically, since it is part of the executive branch, we're asking George Bush to police himself.
Yeah.
And we have our Dick Cheney, who shoots his friend in the face and the heart and says nothing's wrong with that. We're asking them to do the policing of the FBI.
Right, and that's what happened here with the national security letters. You had the Department of Justice investigating itself, and that's how we actually learned about this violation, is that the Department of Justice reported it itself. And that's generally, sometimes that system works because you have people in there who want to do the right thing, and then you have the leadership who also wants to do the right thing. But here we have reason to doubt whether they actually want to do the right thing. There's plenty of reason to believe that they're trying to avoid the law and trying to circumvent doing the right thing.
So, Fayez, what should happen?
Well, I think, first of all, I would recommend to Congress that they go back and change some of these laws, because clearly what they allowed the power under the Patriot Act. I'm trying to find it here. Section 505 of the Patriot Act. And they reauthorized that last year, and that's the one that allows the executive branch to get records that are relevant to national security investigation. I think now we have reason to know and believe that they are violating that. So I think it's right and proper for the Congress to go in and say, all right, well, we're going to take that power away because we can't trust you right now.
And anything else that we should be doing? That Congress should be doing on this. I mean, should we revisit the entire Patriot Act?
Yeah, I think that's. I mean, not. I think that we should revisit the entire Patriot Act with the goal of reforming it and getting it right. I think that, you know, it clearly was passed hastily.
Most people had not. 99.9% of the people had not read it.
Yeah, 99.9% had not read it exactly, and it was passed, I think, 45 days after 9/11 or something like that, and then it was just reauthorized relatively cleanly as well, so there weren't many changes made. I think there needs to be a wholesale effort to change it. I think, you know, Senator Feingold of Wisconsin, Russ Feingold, has been on the forefront of, like, pushing an alternative to the Patriot Act that should be considered. That's what I would do. I would recommend that they follow that approach of reforming this whole thing, not doing away with it. I think it's important, right?
Well, what's important about it? What's important about it?
I think that, first of all, we do want to make it easier to convict and get information specifically related to terror. So if we have a terrorist and we know he's a terrorist, we want to be able to have the tools to convict and also snoop on them. I think, you know, it's hard to convict.
I guess my position, my belief is that we are so incapable as a nation of targeting people fairly. You know, all of the racial profiling that goes on in this country as a result of the legacy of enslavement, racism, intolerance, all of that. Because you said if we have a terrorist, the question is, how do we get to that if legitimately?
Yeah. No, I hear that, and I have reasons to doubt that myself. I'm a Muslim American, so
you know what I'm talking
about. I've
been
under the watch, mm-hmm. I believe, of the government for sure, and so I have reasons to doubt whether they can actually do this properly, but. I would say that our faith, I think, has largely been broken because of the Bush administration. And I think we want to preserve at least some powers that whoever the next president might be, hopefully it's a much better one and on the Democratic side, in my view. But, you know, whoever that might be, we would hope that they would employ these powers the way they're meant to be employed. And I think that the administration has broken our faith on that.
And in terms of what Congress should be doing now, holding these hearings, and can they bring up the question of redoing, or from my perspective, getting rid of the Patriot Act? Is that possible to do now?
No, absolutely. And I think that that's something that the chairman, Patrick Leahy, is actually looking at, is whether there needs to be some legislation. And that's the purpose of these initial hearings, is to say, you know, is there a problem with the law, or is there a problem with the implementation? And clearly what Mueller was doing yesterday was saying, no, listen, it's all implementation. Don't worry, the law is great. It's just our problem, and we'll fix it. But
and
I think, you know.
What, are they going to be bringing in something other than human beings? You know, to implement this? Did he offer up an explanation of what's going to change?
Well, the only thing he said is that there'll be more oversight inside. There'll be more people looking at it, more people checking, but, you know, who does?
Well, more of them checking.
That's
more,
right.
The
yeah.
FBI, it, within the FBI, will be checking harder, trust us.
That's right. That's basically what it is, trust us.
Where can people go to find out more information about this, Fayez?
Well, you can go to a number of places. At the American Progress site, AmericanProgress.org, we've been tracking this, and you can look at some of the work that we've been doing and are now analyzing this. I would also recommend that people go and check out what Patrick Leahy, the chairman of the Senate Judiciary, is doing. But you can go to judiciary.senate.gov and learn more about his hearings. And of course, the ACLU is a great place to go as well.
I want to thank you so much, Fayez Shakir, Research Director for the Progress Report and ThinkProgress.org at the Center for American Progress. Thank you so much for joining me on the Wake Up Call
this
morning.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun.
Take care. Bye-bye. Listen, folks, this is Liz Brown, the Wake Up Call. I think when we come back, what we will be doing is a little bit of open lines here till the end of the morning. So join me at 1-877-920-WGNU. I'll be back after this break. We'll be right back.
America needs is affordable health insurance. Finding affordable health insurance for you and your family, it's on everyone's mind right now. If you're self-employed, it's on your mind too. One of the things we face as entrepreneurial Americans is finding affordable health insurance. Well, I've found a company you can call right now and get affordable health insurance. Midwest National Life Insurance Company of Tennessee. Write this number down. 877-652-7793. That's 877-652-7793. Midwest specializes in helping entrepreneurs of all kinds. Those of us who run small businesses or don't get health insurance where we work, to protect our families with affordable health insurance. Call 877-652-7793. Not available in all states. Association membership is required in most states. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Exclusions and limitations apply.
Tax day will be here soon. While you're sorting through receipts and visiting your tax preparer, remember to make a mark for multiple sclerosis on your tax form. Missouri taxpayers can make a contribution to support MS research and services on their state tax return. Just check the small box at the top of your Missouri tax form. For more information, call your local chapter of the National MS Society or visit nationalmssociety.org. When you do your taxes, remember to make a mark for MS. News to you from Radio Free St. Louis.
Tune in every Thursday at noon to 1 p.m. on WGNU 920 on the AM dial. You can talk to Dr. Walker and her guests weekly to discuss health and medical issues. Nurse Wanda always has information that you won't want to miss. Every show is different, and talking to Dr. Walker is always fun. Call 314-454-0400. You can also listen to Dr. Walker's Medical Hour on the Internet. Log on to WGNU.net. Click on Listen Live.
Be in the know as you're on the go with Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much business to tend to. 1-877-920-WGNU. Get up, get up, get to me. Kevin, good morning.
Good morning, Liz. You know, my guess is the FBI really, because the FBI wants their power, because what they really want to do is investigate groups in America to keep the status quo. Like, they don't like feminist groups. They don't like the Socialist Party. The things they did to the Black Panther, how they got after the Civil Rights Movement, anything that might change status quo. And if they can just arbitrarily check everybody, they could link things together without, you know, going into some legal process. That's my theory, man, because I know they could care less. I mean, they might be going after, not that they could care less about terrorism, but...
To me, it is what an amazing tool that you have. If you don't like somebody.
Period.
You know, period. Or if you're going through a bad divorce, or a friend of yours needs some intel on somebody else, what a wonderful tool that you have that you don't have to go through anybody. And give slip somebody one of these letters, and you get into their who they've been calling. You get into where they've been going on the Internet. You get into where their money is coming from, when their money comes in, how they're spending their money, all of that. Well, I mean, imagine that. That's just too much. Nobody should have the ability to do that, because it's, first of all, it's too tempting. Secondly, it's nobody, there's no oversight to it, so that makes it even more tempting. You can do it and get away with it. Imagine somebody going through a bad divorce and you want some intel on your spouse, okay? And you want to, and she's telling you that she doesn't have any money. And this is the reason why we need the child support the way that it is. And you have the ability, a buddy of yours has the ability to go and check out her bank account? Come on.
Check out her whole life.
Check out her whole life.
Yep, check out her whole life. All right, you know what, Liz? What, I just want to make one comment. I guess it's a comment. You know, if they would go after the police department and check out their bank accounts, because some police officers are living well above their means, and how are they getting that money? And I think that'd be a real fight on drugs in America.
Thanks for your call. 1-877-920-WGNU. Car phone.
How you doing, Ms. Vaughn? That brother just stole my thunder. Okay, I wanted you to, if you want to know about the FBI, check out that picture that Departed. It's a true story. You have a nice day.
1-877-920. I saw Departed. I saw Departed. I saw it when it came to St. Louis the first night. And it's all about corruption. It is truly about corruption within the police department. 1-877-920-WGNU. D.
Good morning, Dr. Brown.
How are you?
Great, and you are too.
Well, thank you.
You're more than welcome. Listen, I know your plate is so very full. Did you hear about this policeman that took the tickets from the scalpers?
From the scalpers? Well, no, this is the, I mean, yes, these were the Super, or not the Super Bowl, but the World Series tickets.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, Jennifer Johnson issue,
she's looking into it.
Oh, is she?
She's looking into
it. Is she?
Yeah, and so is, what's his name, Mokwa. He's looking into it, too. Turns out that these cops went and had, there were some people that were trying to buy tickets, okay? They weren't trying to sell tickets. They went up to them and confiscated one of the tickets, I think it was, with one person. It was one of the tickets. And the people that had the tickets went to the World Series game. Then they saw somebody sitting in that seat. And they went up to that person and said, you know, what are you doing in this seat? Who do your words? You get this seat from? Blah, 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 blah. And that person disappeared by, I guess it's not halftime in World Series, but disappeared. And turns out that the cops were going out there shaking people down for these World Series tickets and giving them to their friends.
Now, I mean, you know.
Here in St. Louis.
What kind of law is that?
And why wasn't that, why hasn't that been followed more? I think it was front page of the Post. I think it was. It was front page of a section of the Post. I don't remember if it was the front page, but I know if it was the front page, but I know it was front page of something.
Okay.
So, but why aren't we having more follow up on that? The head should be rolling.
Head
should be rolling. So the question.
I didn't want you to let that skip by. I want people to talk about that.
You're absolutely right. So when we ask the question about the corruption within the St. Louis Police Department, would they shoot an unarmed kid for no reason? Well, they're stealing tickets.
There you go.
From citizens out there on the street. They're stealing tickets.
Found an example of the attorney.
There you go.
Thanks.
Thanks for your call.
Halftime at the World Series?
Halftime. I know.
Between innings, maybe?
Between innings. And I said I know that there's no halftime. I said that. 1-877-920-WGNU. No, this is the seventh inning stretch. That's what I was thinking of. That's halftime in my little sports illiterate world. 1-877-920-WGNU. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. 454-0400 is the phone number. Tom. Okay. Ike.
How you doing?
Good morning.
I love the show today.
Well, thank you.
I'm loving y'all talking about Juan Williams and how so not laid back but passive. He's like he's afraid to talk.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you had him on tone the radio, boy, you wrecked a man's nerves, Liz. Well, that was just terrible what you did to him.
You know what? I don't even feel guilty. Isn't that something?
And you were rough. And I'm going to go back to the former Irene J. Smith had at Northwest High School. And the same thing about you, about these crooked cops, a guy stood up in the auditorium and talked about it. And you know, Mokwa couldn't say nothing. He said, how many crooked cops you got on your force? He couldn't say a word. And Major Atkins, I know both of them. And I said, Major Atkins and Captain Eisen, I said, you all know me. I said, I can't believe that you're a part of this in this city today. And I'm holding both of them.
Mm-hmm.
But they look like old men compared to me. I'm not bragging about myself, but them jobs wearing them dudes down.
Well, thanks for your call. 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. You need to get up. You need to get to me. These are amazing times that we are living in. And right now, as we speak, there is a meeting up in Jefferson City of the Education Committee. And they have all of these bills in front of them for more charter schools, more charter. We're spending tens of millions of dollars on charter schools. They are not working. They do not educate our children better. They take away money from the kids that need to be educated in the St. Louis public schools. They do not have to follow the same rules and regulations that they do, that everybody else has to follow. So this is a very important day. This is a very, very, very important day. Renee.
Good morning. I didn't mean to call on, are we on a public school watch bill or something? I just wanted to ask a question, what happened on the Senate floor yesterday.
Okay, what specifically about what?
About the war with the troops.
Well, it looks like the Senate has passed a bill that it has the timeline in it. It was a vote of, I believe it was 48 to 50, with Joe Lieberman voting with the Republicans.
Oh, I don't like him.
I don't either. And then a Republican coming over to the other side. And then we had the one Democrat who is still out on medical leave. So the Democrats got the votes that they needed to put timelines in the spending bill. So now it goes back to conference, and then it goes to George Bush.
Yeah, and he'll veto it, you think?
He will veto it, and then it will come back to the Congress to see if the Congress has the ability to override the veto.
Okay. Yeah, I hope so.
I think that this is going to be a process. I don't know that the Congress does, but it's a wonderful thing to put people on Front Street about their position on this war. Because
right.
Because the changes that took place in the United States Congress last election cycle was solely about this war.
Right.
And corruption of, and, well, it was an indictment of, people were responding to the corruption of this administration and the corruption of this war.
Right. And what about this firing of these U.S. attorneys?
Outrageous. It's just completely, completely outrageous. And you know what's interesting? If you just close your eyes right now and listen, and if you hear silence out there, that's the deafening silence of the Republicans that are coming to the rescue of Alberto Gonzalez. Think about it. Who's out here saying anything supportive about him besides George W. Bush?
No one.
There you go.
No, I think he's out of there.
I hope so.
I do too. I can't wait till this administration is over.
See, I think we should impeach him just to put the underscore and the exclamation point behind we don't accept corruption.
Yeah, I heard one of the Republicans was talking about the big I word, Chuck Hagel of Nebraska.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was.
He's the one that crossed party lines yesterday, isn't he?
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. He said the impeachment word. Yes, he did.
Right.
Okay.
So that's a good thing. Thanks, Liz. Enjoyed the call.
Thank you. 1-877-920-WGNU. James.
They're circling around public schools with private charter schools because they don't have to answer to anyone.
And they make money for people.
Right.
That's right.
And they don't have to answer. And not only that, they let in whoever they want to let in schools.
That's right.
So
and
it's
a way to
public schools.
And it's an attack on public schools. And it's just like, you know, if you want a private school, go pay for your own private school.
Right, right.
You know, if you don't think that this public school is working, you're entitled to that position as an American. But go pay for your own school. I'm not going to pay for you.
But that's what they're doing. They're circling around public schools in order to eliminate public schools,
that's
put
fact.
In private schools.
That's fact.
Yeah.
That's a fact.
Thank you.
Thanks for your
bye-bye.
Call. Linda.
Good morning, Ms. Brown. I know it's time to get off, but I just want to ask a question regarding the war. Every time someone is killed over there for St. Louis, they always show the white faces. Do we have any idea how many African Americans are murdered over there in the war?
In Missouri, you know, that's a great question, and I'll see what I can do to find that out. That's
okay,
a great
thank
question.
Thank you. Enjoy your day.
Thank you. Enjoy yours. Listen, folks, I will be
enjoy
back.
Enjoy your gas prices.
Enjoy your gas prices. You better fill up. You better go out there and get some buckets and fill up with gas because the prices are just insane. Absolutely insane. I will be back same time, same place tomorrow, 20 cents in one day. 20 cents up. 20 cents. No, in 4 hours. Up 20 cents in 4 hours. My name is Liz Brown. Thank you all so much for listening. And until tomorrow, stay strong.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. Struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny,
poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal treatment.
And so we say to all in this nation who would dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.